Here's a sure sign that the left is collapsing. Media Matters for America, founded by David Brock in 2004, finds itself teetering on the edge of collapse as it grapples with a staggering $15 million in legal fees stemming from lawsuits initiated by Elon Musk. The left's Marxist watchdog, long known for harassing media that reveals too much about the left's corruption, has inevitably been decimated by financial blows from multiple fronts, while its fair-weather friends scatter. Media Matters' slow race to dissolution deepened following a November 2023 report by Media Matters claiming that advertisements on X were appearing alongside pro-Nazi content, a claim that sparked a massive $75 million advertiser exodus from X. This controversy ignited Musk's lawsuit, alleging the organization deliberately manipulated the platform's algorithm to create a false narrative, damaging X's reputation and revenue. The fallout left Media Matters calling the lawsuit frivolous, causing Media Matters to file a motion to dismiss, which was denied. A countersuit battle has now spread to a California court in a desperate attempt by Media Matters to block X's lawsuits in Ireland and Singapore, alleging these are part of a vendetta-driven campaign to punish Media Matters. Now Media Matters is being hit from all sides as legal and financial pressures mount. The Federal Trade Commission's May 2025 investigation into alleged illegal collusion to reduce X's revenue, combined with earlier probes by Texas and Missouri attorneys general, has run up a tab on Media Matters of $15 million in legal fees, forcing layoffs and operational cuts. Big donors like George Soros, the Tides Foundation, and the NEA are nowhere to be found. Fundraising struggles and advocacy hesitancy have further strained the organization, which has considered closure as a last resort, according to internal documents from a New York Times report. But Media Matters publicly denies plans to shut down. Hubris is a heavy drug, and its supplier, the left's corporate power structure, is rapidly collapsing.
We're getting to the point now the left is entering the era of sedition, insurrection, but in the last week, it's become surreal. We had this Democratic official, Sadie Perkins, and she posted that she was almost happy that we lost over 100 people, the majority of them children, in this flash flood in Texas. She said they were all white and therefore they were discriminatory. I've never seen anything like it. It's very, very, very disturbing. We've had now two organized assassination attempts of ICE agents who are just following the law. Why is it happening? We've said in the past that part of it is that the Democratic agenda nobody wanted. As a result of that, they lost the Congress, they lost the White House, they lost, of course, the Supreme Court. So they don't have any power, so they're frustrated. In the first administration, Donald Trump addressed symptoms of the progressive project. This time, he's dealing with the symptoms, and the left is saying, oh my gosh, Donald Trump is starting to address our left-wing monopoly. If he were to be successful, we would collapse, dissipate, disintegrate.
Media Matters simply represents the internal chaos of the FAFOed Democratic Party. The Democrat Party's approval ratings have plummeted to historic lows, with only 27% of registered voters viewing them positively, according to an NBC News poll. The party's reliance on elite-driven, focus group-tested horse pucky has alienated voters. Furthermore, this greedy, narcissistic gerontocracy has damaged future generations, obliterating the American dream. And as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting propaganda machine goes down like the Titanic, and Act Blue is investigated for foreign donations, and the Golden Goose USAID is no longer funding the Democrats' NGO network, undermining the United States sovereignty, the Democratic Party has become a shadow of its former self and will eventually be crushed by American providence. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Folks, we have a very, very big Friday show for you today. This is the American Journal. We'll be back on the other side with your daily dispatch. We got Gary Franchi in studio with us. Very big interview there. We're going to be honoring Ron Paul ahead of his 90th birthday this weekend.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? Because I love this stuff, methylene blue. I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. Oh, you still like Brain Force? Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple of days. So I'm going to take my dose of Methylene Blue, my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process of the cell. It's like iodine at the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
It's Friday, August 8th, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday morning from the InfoWars headquarters here in Austin, Texas. We got a very big show for you today. We actually did a pre-recorded interview with Gary Franchi of Next News Network. It went very well. We filmed it yesterday as Mr. Franchi is on his way to Ron Paul's 90th birthday party. The man is turning 90 years old this weekend. And he's still making podcasts. And he's still commenting with, you know, perfect clarity on the modern political world. A modern miracle, I would say. I'm going to be going to that too. Very excited. Hopefully we get to meet a lot of people in the sector. It seems like a real who's who of the whole liberty movement is going to be there. And we're going to spend some time today looking back on the career of Dr. Ron Paul, celebrating his legendary influence in American politics, which really laid the groundwork for so much of what we're seeing and experiencing today, including Donald Trump himself. It is happening, folks. And frankly, we got to appreciate Ron Paul while we have him. The man is 90 years old. I mean, we might only have another 20 or 30 years with the man. So we really got to appreciate it and show the respect that he deserves. So we're going to take a little walking tour through his career and show you some of his greatest hits to, again, just show honor and respect to the godfather of this movement. I think for his birthday, we should end the Fed. I think he deserves, as a little birthday present, us ending the Federal Reserve. What do you guys think? I think we should do it for him. We can wrap it up nice. We got a lot of videos to show you. And it's going to be a fun show today. I'll maybe open up phone lines for calls in the second hour. We'll play it by ear, but we'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. Here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Friday, the 8th of August, 2025. FBI ousts top official involved in January 6th prosecutions. Former FBI Acting Director Brian Driscoll is among those being forced out by the Bureau. The FBI has pushed out at least three senior officials involved in cases connected with the January 6th, 2021 Capitol riot, telling them to leave by Friday without giving them a specific reason, the Post has confirmed. However, if you look at the gentleman's official portrait, I don't think that mustache is regulation. I'm just saying, if you wanted an excuse to oust him from the FBI, I think looking like he cosplays as a pirate would be enough. Personally, for me, you want to uphold those standards. I mean, you know, in like the 50s, they had to wear a hat. They all had to wear the same color suit. Now you're up here with a Satan style goatee. I don't know. It's all collapsing. No, it's Brian Driscoll, former acting FBI director. Steve Jensen, acting director in charge of the Washington field office, and Special Agent Walter Giardina are all being forced out as part of a purge that's expected to include other key officials in the Bureau. Driscoll, who served as acting director before Cash Patel and was confirmed earlier this year, revealed his firing in an email to employees reported by NBC, saying, quote, last night I was informed that tomorrow will be my last day in the FBI. I understand you may have a lot of questions regarding why, for which I currently have no answers. No cause has been articulated at this time. He's come under fire from allies of President Trump earlier this year after aggressively pushing back against pressure to oust agents who'd handled Capitol riot cases. He was fired just short of retirement and therefore is not able to collect a full pension. that's good. No, that's good. That's just, it's good. That's good. That's very good. That's very good. The type of person to use his power to insist that the Capitol riot prosecutions go forward. Yeah, I suspect he shouldn't just be fired. He probably should have his hard drive seized. Let's just say that. Meanwhile, U.S. offers $50 million reward for Nicolas Maduro's arrest. On October 7th, 2025, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi announced that the DOJ and State Department are offering a $50 million reward for information leading to the arrest of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Okay, I don't know what he said, but it must have been really anti-Semitic. Having been accused of narco-terrorism, Maduro remains in power as the U.S. announced a $50 million reward recently, Bondi said. What happened to Gallardo or whatever that, but I thought Juan Gallardo was the president of Nicaragua or whatever. But wait a second, Venezuela, I mean. Who was that guy? Who was that guy that Donald Trump introduced at the State of the Union as the president of Venezuela? Are you telling me that was just some guy? That wasn't the president of Venezuela? That was just some CIA operative? You introduced as the president of Venezuela for some reason? Amid ongoing pressure on the Venezuelan regime, the initiative underscores efforts to target corruption and human rights abuses as Maduro remains in power despite U.S. sanctions and indictments. Okay, what is there even to say about this? I almost don't even want to search it. I don't even want to know the answer. But I gotta ask, what did Venezuela do to Israel? I gotta wonder. What do we think the odds are? I mean, I've not looked into this story. I have not searched this. What do you think the odds are that if we search Venezuela and Israel, we're gonna see something about how Venezuela is doing something anti-Israel? What do we think the odds are? Should we do it? Should we do it live? Venezuela, Israel. Uh-oh. The first response, U.S. increases award for arrest of Venezuela's Maduro. Drug charges was among the first to denounce Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza and its aggression. Okay. Caracas welcomed the Iran-Israel ceasefire and called for regional denuclearization in West Asia. This is a little cheat code. When the U.S. does something that's kind of inexplicable, that kind of doesn't make any sense, is costing us a ton of money, and is in some way imposing on another people, you can pretty much assume it's because they did something that Israel doesn't like, and so we're gonna punish them now. Again, I realize this is the first I saw of this, and just as I'm reading it, I'm like, this, why would they do this? Why would they offer $50 million to get this guy? What is even the point of that? What is our relationship with Venezuela that this guy is the center of? And just as I'm reading it, it's like, it's Israel, isn't it? It's probably got something to do with Israel, if I had to guess, because I can't figure out what exactly the official claim is. Following the announcement, U.S. officials said the reward aims to elicit actionable intelligence from individuals with direct knowledge of Maduro's operations. It's the initiative to underscore efforts to target corruption and human rights abuses as Maduro remains in power despite sanctions and U.S. indictments. Yeah, human rights abuses, guys. No, it's not, I mean, what's weird about it, it's a $50 million reward because of the human rights abuses. That's a firm stance America has. I mean, if we see human rights abuses going on around the world, I mean, it's a blank check from us. I mean, whatever it costs to stop the human rights abuses. Now, that's just what we're going to do. We'll carry that weight. We'll bear that burden. Because God forbid human rights abuses exist around the world while America is in charge. Anyway, the starvation campaign does continue in Gaza. Is it really that hard? So the first thing that pops up, the story from last month, we propose advancing the creation of nuclear weapons-free zone in West Asia and calling the UN Security Council to implement a mechanism for nuclear disarmament in Israel, whose secret arsenal poses a serious threat to the regional and global security, the statement said. The missive condemned Israel's sustained impunity in refusing to allow International Atomic Energy Agency inspections, as well as its refusal to comply with the Treaty on Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. The Venezuelan-led would-be initiative likewise aims to achieve the recognition of Palestinians' people's rights to a sovereign state, with East Jerusalem as its capital, and refugees' rights to return to their land. In a separate statement issued on Tuesday, the Maduro government reiterated the need for global peace summit to be hosted in a West Asian country and collectively led by the Arab League, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the Gulf Cooperation Council, and BRICS. We affirm that lasting peace in the region will be impossible without a just resolution to the Palestinian cause in accordance with United Nations resolution. Yeah. So this article is basically just listing the, human rights abuses that Maduro is committing. How did I know? Meanwhile, Disney and Lucasfilms settle Gina Carano lawsuit, signal desire to work with actress again. An agreement has reportedly been reached between Disney, Lucasfilm, and former Mandalorian actress Gina Carano after she sued over her 2021 firing from the Star Wars series. Do y'all remember this one? Do y'all remember what she was fired for? Do y'all remember? I remember. It was because she said that the dehumanization that was happening during COVID was reminiscent of the opening developments of the Holocaust. Pretty sure that's what it was. Which, it's one of the, you think you understand cancel culture, and then somebody gets canceled for comparing the modern world to the Holocaust, and you're like, but that's all you people do. But that's all you do 24/7 is talk about how much like the Holocaust this is. But Gina Carano did it, and she got fired for it. Why? Because she was being accurate. She was actually expressing genuine and well-founded concern about the fact that worldwide, governmental policy was being used to literally dehumanize people to the point that you had Americans calling for their fellow Americans to be put in a camp, have their children taken away from them and forcibly injected with an experimental shot, or else be denied hospital care and health care and food. So a little bit more like the Holocaust, like a little bit more reminiscent or similar to the Holocaust than things like building a wall between the U.S. and Mexico, right? But there's a different reason that they're settling this, we think. The speculation abounds, but there may be more to this than they say. In a statement to Variety, a Lucasfilm spokesperson says, the Walt Disney Company and Lucasfilm are pleased to announce that we have reached an agreement with Gina Carano to resolve her issues, her pending lawsuit against the companies. Ms. Carano was always well respected by her directors, co-stars, and staff, and she worked hard to protect her craft while treating her colleagues with kindness and respect. With the lawsuit concluded, we look forward to identifying opportunities to work together with Ms. Carano in the near future. So they came to this agreement And a lot of people are suggesting that this was it in an effort to avoid discovery. So basically, Disney was faced with the question, would you rather admit you were wrong, pay this gigantic settlement, and apologize to Gina Carano, or else we need to take a look at your email server? And they said, and who do we make it out to? And I'm sorry, who do we make out the astonishingly large check to, so we don't have to show what we talk about behind the scenes? So she says, were my questions about masks, lockdown, and forced vaccines okay to ask and push the subject in the light? Should we have been allowed to publicly discuss those topics at a time without being harassed or censored? Absolutely. Again, just absolutely ridiculous, absolutely absurd that this ever happened. And again, it's like, it just shows how just utterly arbitrary the entire cancel culture thing is and how utterly insane everybody went in 2020. She got canceled for saying this is like the Holocaust. Not even this is like the Holocaust, but the same argument that's made 10 million times in every possible chance that the leftists get when Donald Trump is like, yeah, I don't think that USAID needs to be paying for gay porn in Uganda. And they're like, you know, this is how the Holocaust started. You know, the Holocaust didn't start with the people in gas chambers. You know, it started with withdrawing funds for homosexual transgender research. So just saying, we're, you know, I'm just saying Trump is Hitler and we're headed down a very dangerous path and never, and hashtag never again. Okay. I mean, that's 90, I think that's 95 to 98% of the leftists argument, and then somebody gets canceled for it because they relate it to COVID. They relate it to a situation where unelected bureaucrats who have never treated a single patient get up on TV and demand that you unilaterally shut down the entire economic engine of your country, inject poison into your vein, put a mask on your child, put people in camps for not, you know, agreeing to go along with it. Just brutal repressive tactics, sending tanks with armed men with, you know, full camo face mask, riot control gear to shut down a bar that was selling beer without approval with this unconstitutional, you know, just by fiat martial law, throwing hairdressers in prison for daring to cut hair when some whatever West African moron from the WHO declares you can't exist anymore. Never in the history of our country have we experienced such Nazi-like Third Reich behavior. And Gina Carano was fired by Disney for pointing that out. Whatever. We can move on. It's just, I mean, I still feel like these people are just getting away with it. I still feel like they're just getting away with it. The fact that firing her wasn't just an injury to her in particular, it was part of the society-wide campaign to silence dissent. Gina Carano is not currently employed by Lucasfilm, and there are no plans for her to be in the future. Nevertheless, her social media posts denigrating people based on their cultural and religious identities are abhorrent and unacceptable. She didn't even work for Lucasfilm. She doesn't even work for us, but we just want to let you know we hate her. Thanks, Lucasfilm. How's the movie business going? Yeah, oh, I have a question. How you doing? How's the receipts looking? How you guys doing? Last I checked, around the time you were firing Gina Carano, you had just taken possession of the most valuable intellectual property in the history of the world. How's that going? How you doing with that? Is that going well? How you doing, Lucasfilms? How you doing, Disney? How you doing? You doing all right? uh I don't even have the words to express how badly they're doing. I'm sitting here trying to think of words. They'll go down in the history books. Their abysmal failure in every regard will be seen as a, I don't know, some sort of morality tale in the future. That you embraced the dark side. And now you are literally Emperor Palpatine being thrown down the exhaust shaft to your destruction. Now, how'd that work out? How'd that work out, giving your company entirely over to the leftists? I know this isn't that big of a story, but do you realize, have you really stopped to truly take in, comprehend, let it wash over you, just how much we're winning? I mean, if you look back over the last 10 years of InfoWars existence, we have been under relentless attack. You cannot even imagine. I mean, they have spent billions of dollars trying to take us down. We haven't even stumbled, folks. We have expansion plans that are in the works that you're going to be very excited about and might want to go support at thealexjonesstore.com. They have come after us with everything they've got. There is a unified, monolithic conspiracy against us of banks, of big tech companies, of politicians, of international forces. Entire university, like, industries are there just to watch InfoWars, to try to counteract us in the information war. And we are still growing. We're still expanding. We're still dominating across all the metrics. I can't even remember the number of mainstream media corpses we've left in our wake. It's like the image. I mean, we're leaving a trail of tears behind us. It's Brian Stelter. It's Don Lemon. It's just CNN as a corporation. It's CBS. It's Stephen Colbert. It's Jon Stewart. It's Oliver Darcy, just corpse after corpse after corpse after corpse. It's Jezebel. They don't even exist anymore. I have forgotten about them. They're legion. Salon, didn't just Salon shut down? Wasn't that a thing at one point? They've had to bail out Vice like 7 times, and it's still a ridiculous failure. Now South Park is making entire episodes about like Nick Fuentes and Andrew Wilson. I mean, folks, South Park makes fun of Michael Jackson and they coined the Streisand effect. And they're making entire episodes about dudes with no institutional support whatsoever sitting in their basement or their living room talking to a webcam and changing the world. Disney is completely collapsing. Lucasfilm, I mean, all of Hollywood is just crumbling into dust as a direct consequence of their DEI obsession. And we're continuing to rise. Folks, we are the culture now. We have won in the sphere of culture. Total victory.
Might as well go to thealexjonesstore.com and get this methylene blue. And I'm not exaggerating when I say this is the best product you guys have ever had. It's just absolutely fantastic.
It's insane.
It'll take me an hour to explain why. Just go and buy it. I'm expecting 2 bottles tomorrow.
Absolutely. I want to tell the audience a little bit about what to experience on Methylene Blue. I know we've talked about it incessantly. We've had basically every guest take it. We've run ad after ad after ad for it. Talk to your doctor. But as long as you're not on SSRIs, this could be the best thing that you've ever taken. A lot of stuff that's good for you. You take it, and it is good for you, but you don't necessarily feel it. Take B12 every single day. You might not necessarily feel it. Maybe if it builds up in your system, you'll start noticing that you have more energy and you're getting sick less often. I understand, but Methylene Blue is one of the few products over the counter out there that you will physically feel within 30 minutes, unless you have supernatural mitochondria health. And it's not just the way that your body feels, even though there are sensations. It's the way that your state of mind completely changes. It doesn't make you a different person. You just realize that your thoughts are more organized, that a veil is lifted, that you have clarity of focus, that you have more energy, but you're not jittery, that there's no crash, that you could still go to sleep if you wanted to, but you don't feel like you're falling asleep every single day. I mean, Methylene Blue is something that I will take for the rest of my life. And you can look into all the studies and the conversations from RFK Jr. to Mel Gibson to Chase Hughes. They've done studies on the effects of Methylene Blue where people take it and then they do red light therapy and the benefits are just absolutely astounding. You're absorbing more oxygen. Your mitochondria are totally fired up. Your body is absorbing more energy from the sun itself. It's like super chlorophyll for a human body. And you'll feel better. And you'll feel the hot blood running through your veins. And you'll understand that you're focused, that you have more energy, and you won't be jittery. And there isn't a come down. It helps your body absorb more of the oxygen that you breathe in. Literally the stuff that life is made of. Isn't it said in Genesis that God breathed life into Adam? Well, this makes you be able to make the most out of God's breath into you. And look, our whole purpose on this earth is to honor God. We are his creation. And so what better way to honor him than becoming the best versions of ourselves? It's called self-actualization. When you actually become all you can potentially become. And our bodily health is part of that. Our intellectual health, our mind health is part of that. And then the good that we do in the world is part of that. And so by going to thealexjonesstore.com right now and getting Methylene Blue, you're fighting for your body and your mind and for humanity at the same time. You're doing what God calls all of us to do. Methylene Blue will be one of the best decisions that you ever make.
This broadcast is only as powerful as you make it. When you share the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X, on your email list or text message, on other platforms, word of mouth on X, it changes the world. When you share the feed from Infowars.com/show, it changes the world. So remember Paul Revere's, you're not part of the solution, you are the solution, you're everything. When you share the live feed, when you share the clips of the show, when you send that out to everyone you know, that's the reach, the amplification, that is 99% of this operation. You are the whole shooting match. And the InfoWar is everything. And you are the mind, the bones, the guts, the blood, the will, the soul of the InfoWar. So release your will and power now. Destroy them.
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. It's our Friday edition. And this weekend is going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of people headed down to Galveston, Texas to attend Ron Paul's 90th birthday party. And I'm very excited for that. So make sure that you are following us on social media. I'll be down there hobnobbing. That's a phrase, right? I'll be hobnobbing, rubbing elbows. And posting a lot, so make sure to follow us on X. Follow at Infowars Journal, at Real Alex Jones, at Harrison H. Smith, at Owen Schroyer 1776. Please do share the links. Support us however you can. And obviously sharing the links and the clips is the easiest and in many ways the most powerful way to spread the word and help contribute and participate and be a key member of this information war. A key operative in the battle on the battlefield. Like I said, we got a lot of videos to go to and a lot of stories to cover. Here's some good news. Grand jury indicts man who threw cinder blocks at Border Patrol officer during L.A. riots. He now faces up to 20 years in prison. A federal grand jury indicted a man who was caught on video throwing cinder blocks at Border Patrol agents in June during the Los Angeles riots. Jacob Daniel Terrazas, 30, was charged with one count of assault on a federal employee by using a deadly and dangerous weapon resulting in bodily injury. After repeatedly throwing pieces of cinder block at law enforcement, officers detained Terrazas, who now faces up to 20 years in federal prison if convicted, U.S. Attorney Bill Esaley said. We will not stand by while our brave officers get hurt. If you're thinking of hurting or injuring an officer or agent enforcing immigration laws, think again. It's not worth it. Yeah, they're really, they're throwing the book at him. I mean, they're basically charging him with the equivalent of being in the same zip code as the Capitol building on January 6th, 2021. It is good to see this guy be arrested. Thank you. Thank you. Now, 2 months after the fact, this is the video that we kept playing where there's Border Patrol agents speeding down the road in cars and this guy just standing in the median throwing bricks at the cars as they drive past, just smashing the windshields of federal vehicles as they drive past. In one of these images that, you know, AI couldn't even recreate. Well, one of these situations that is truly beyond explanation. When there's just a guy just very casually in the middle of the day in front of everybody is just picking up cinder blocks and throwing them at cars and the cars are just driving right past like they don't even see it happening. It's one car after another. It's like, what's happening? What is happening in our country? What is this? You know what I mean? Like, it's different. It's different if it's like in the middle of a riot and everybody's running everywhere and there's flashbangs going off and there's mace filling the air and people are throwing rocks and other people are throwing something else. But it's like when it's just like cars driving down the street and there's just a guy like, oh, that's not a pretty nice rock. Throw that at the cop car. Ah, got it. All right. Grab this next one. Next car just comes driving right by. That guy's about to throw a rock at us. He got us. Next couple of cars. It's middle of the day on film. No attempt to hide it. No attempt to stop him. Crazy. It's just crazy that nobody just ran him over. Why just run him over? I would have run him over. If it was me, I would have just run him over with my car. Personally, felt good about it. Finally, we have this. Netanyahu aiming to capture Gaza City reverts to risky military strategy. I think that's a comparable, you know, it's a comparison word. It is riskier than just performing airstrikes against the people with no air force. Yeah, it's going to be riskier than that for sure. Throughout the war in Gaza, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel has repeatedly said that he just needs one more military maneuver to finally defeat Hamas. That I just need that one more military maneuver. If we just shoot the people at the aid distribution sites, that'll do it, I think. In April last year, Mr. Netanyahu said Israel was merely one step from victory as long as it captured Rafah, a city in southern Gaza. This March, with Rafah long decimated and Hamas still refusing to surrender, Mr. Netanyahu started a campaign that he promised would finally give Israel victory. When it did not, he launched an even more broad operation in May that, 3 months later, has failed to dislodge Hamas's battered remnants while leaving many Palestinians, civilians, on the brink of starvation. Well, now Mr. Netanyahu is planning another major push after his cabinet voted on Friday to prepare to capture Gaza City, the main city in the enclave. That followed his announcement on Thursday that Israel would finally defeat Hamas by occupying all of Gaza and then handing it to Arab forces that will govern it properly without threatening us. They just say things. It's very funny. It's very funny when they say things like that. The last endeavor, which may take weeks to begin, risks ending the same way all of his previous efforts in a strategic dead end, with Hamas still holding on by its fingertips, Israel hostages still in Hamas's grip, and Palestinian civilians trapped in a dystopian nightmare. Israel captured much of Gaza City in the first months of the war, seizing some areas more than once. They're so good, guys. They're capturing cities more than once. Means they didn't capture it, dummies. before relinquishing it all on the false assumption that Hamas had been defeated. Relinquished it on the false assumption that Hamas had been defeated? What does that mean? I don't know what, I mean, with Israel, it's like they're so dishonest, I don't even know what they're trying to say anymore. You know, God only knows what is happening in their minds. The false assumption Hamas, okay. So now they're saying that they thought Hamas was defeated. Why would they think that? What? They still have your hostages. What do you mean you assume they're defeated? You haven't killed any of them. They still have your hostages. They're still operating in all of the tunnels that weren't affected by your bombing campaign, despite leveling all of Gaza. What do you mean you assumed you had defeated Hamas? What does that even mean? This is how I feel. I feel like you're watching, you know, some sort of, you're watching a basketball game and the coach is saying at halftime, we assumed we won the game already. It's like, what does that even mean? The game isn't over. How could you assume that you've won and you're losing and the points on the board, you're losing. So what are you talking about? What is this even supposed to mean? And it just goes on and on. I'm telling you, it is truly wild. What the hell is going on over there? They seized some areas more than once before relinquishing it all on the false assumption that Hamas had been defeated. All right, whatever you say, guys. In his pledge on Thursday to occupy all of Gaza, Mr. Netanyahu appeared to anticipate and try to soften such criticisms by simultaneously promising that Israel would not seek to control the territory in the long term. that's a good one. Oh, that's very funny. That is very funny. All right. If you just treat them like comedians, it's sort of an absurdist humor, but if you're into that sort of thing, they're sort of the Monty Python of countries. If you treat them in that way, you feel like you're getting slapped by a fish every time you hear them say something. Sorry, I shouldn't spend time on stuff like that, but it's just, but what are they even, they assumed Hamas was defeated. What does that mean? It's just one of those things that's like, all right, if they say Hamas is stealing the food aid, it's like there's a very obvious reason for that. Because they don't want to deliver food aid. They want to starve the people, so they want an excuse as to why they're withholding food, right? Because they know, it's not, as the kids say, it's not a good look. You know, starving children, kind of cringe. It's not a good look to starve children. So they need an excuse, so they come up with the excuse of Hamas is stealing the food aid. It's a lie, it's despicable, it's, you know, repeated endlessly despite being observably false. So, I mean, none of that's a surprise. None of that's unique. But at least it's comprehensible. All right, they want to starve people. They want to withhold food. They got to come up with a reason to withhold food. Very simple. Boop, boop, boop. Lie. Ulterior motive. Very simple. What is going on with this other stuff? I mean, what are they even saying? Well, they've captured the city, and then they had to capture it again. From themselves, I guess. And then they all left the city because they thought Hamas was defeated, despite the fact that they're withholding food because Hamas steals it all. But they're defeated. We assumed they were defeated, even though we haven't gotten our hostages back. This is what I'm saying. It's like at a certain point you get to lies that it's like there cannot even be a reason why you would say this lie. It doesn't even make sense. None of the lie doesn't make sense. Why you would lie in the first place, it doesn't make sense. What are you covering up? I just don't even get it anymore. I think they're insane. I think they're crazy. Or I'm crazy. And I'm not crazy. So I think they might be the crazy ones in this situation. And I know people are sick of hearing about Israel. Same here, for the love of God. I do want to make a distinction. Here I am talking about what's going on in Gaza. Somebody said yesterday on X, like, you spent the whole show talking about Israel. It's like, First of all, spent the whole show talking about a whole bunch of other crap, including like an hour on the Texas Democrats. So calm down. And also, everything I talked about was exclusively about what America was doing and things that were happening in America. And, you know, Israelis arresting American students for yelling at an IDF soldier and censorship being done to American people by Jewish groups. So I'm sorry that this has to do with a conflict 1,000 miles away that you don't have anything to do with, but it is in fact affecting America in a variety of different, very powerful ways. And we're going to talk about that, okay? Sorry. We're going to talk about it. But it's just funny when it's like, I'm not even mentioning what's going on in Israel. I'm literally just mentioning what Israel is doing here. And people are like, but this conflict has nothing to do with us. And it's like, then why are they passing laws about it for us in our country? You know what? I think I forgot to grab the video. I retweeted it yesterday. And again, at a certain point, you don't even want to laugh at it because, it's genocide. So, you know, not the type of thing you're really supposed to laugh at. But at the same time, the claims that they make continuously are so asinine and ridiculous that it is kind of funny. You have to admit. Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu now says that the shocking images of Gaza's completely flattened landscape are not the result of months of Israeli bombardment. In fact, they did it to themselves, guys. Gaza blew themselves up. I mean, what am I supposed to say about that? Let's go to this video as soon as we get it pulled in. This is Benjamin Netanyahu saying that the reason that you see flattened buildings all through Gaza is because Hamas did. Now, these are some of the latest images of Gaza from The Guardian. If we can go to my computer screen here, and we can just see the just absolute and complete devastation. It looks like a nuke went off. Absolutely unimaginable devastation. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu blaming this on Hamas. Let's watch.
In the southern town of Rafah, near the Sinai Desert in Egypt, and that town has been flattened. And you have been accused of genocide. How do you respond to that?
Well, Ambassador Huckabee said, if we're practicing genocide, we're surely doing a very bad job of it, because we could have, you know, basically eliminated the entire population of Gaza, but we went the other direction. We did something that no army in history ever did. We're supplying humanitarian food to the enemy's population because we distinguish between combatants and non-combatants. We put in 2 million tons of food. I mean, if we wanted to commit genocide, we wouldn't give 2 million tons of food to the population. And also, the reason you see the flattened buildings is because Hamas booby traps every single building. So when we come in, we first have the population moved, even though Hamas tries to keep them in the combat zones. But after they move and we start to move into the neighborhoods that are now populated only by terrorists, they ignite these booby traps. So what we do is we put in an APC, an armored personnel carrier, with a lot of explosives, detonate it. It sets off all the booby traps, and the buildings begin to collapse as a result of that. They're empty buildings. They're not populated buildings.
The reason that the buildings are flattened is because Hamas booby traps every single building. I mean, what are you even supposed to say? It's not a genocide. Sorry, why wasn't it a genocide? Because they're feeding the population 2 million tons of food. Is that what he said? I don't believe that in the first place. I mean, I know it's cliche and it's obvious, but like, did Auschwitz have food by any chance? Guys, can we look this up? Did Auschwitz serve food to the prisoners in Auschwitz? So I guess that wasn't a genocide. Stupid us. Here we are thinking the Holocaust was a genocide, but Hitler was feeding the Jews food. Who would do that if they're committing a genocide? That doesn't make any sense. How could it be a genocide if he's providing them housing and food and a swimming pool and an orchestra and a maternity ward? Benjamin Netanyahu announces the Nazis never committed genocide because of all the food they gave to the Jews. Yes, prisoners at Auschwitz received food. Well, what the hell? Well, what the heck, you guys? People keep telling me that there was some sort of genocide that happened in World War II. Now you're telling me there wasn't? Now Benjamin Netanyahu is enlightening me to the real definition of genocide? I'm amazed. I'm shocked. Great point, Netanyahu. By the way, he's lying. I don't know if you needed, I mean, about literally everything he's saying, all of it just 100% absolute lies. Do you want to know how the Israelis really deal with booby traps? If you had to guess, what do you think the Israeli tactic for dealing with booby-trapped houses is? Do you think it's to safely remove all of the civilians and then use a robotic APC to detonate bombs to safely clear the area after ensuring that every civilian is outside of the blast zone? Or do you think they strap civilians to the front of their APCs and drive them into the buildings? What do you think is more in line with the Israeli character? It is just truly beyond, like, explanation. From the AP, Israeli use of human shields in Gaza was systematic, soldiers and former detainees tell the AP. And this has been going on forever, but this is from May of this year. The only time the Palestinian man wasn't bound or blindfolded, he said, was when he was used by Israeli soldiers as their human shield, dressed in army fatigues with a camera fixed to his forehead. Ayman Abu Hamadan was forced into houses in the Gaza Strip to make sure they were clear of bombs and gunmen, he said. When one unit finished with him, he was passed to the next. They beat me and told me, you have no other option. Do this or we'll kill you, the 36-year-old told the Associated Press, describing the 2.5 weeks he was held last summer by the Israeli military in northern Gaza. Orders often came from the top, and at times, nearly every platoon used a Palestinian to clear locations, said an Israeli officer speaking on the condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal. Several Palestinians and soldiers told the AP that Israeli troops are systematically forcing Palestinians to act as human shields in Gaza, sending them into buildings and tunnels to check for explosives or militants. The dangerous practice has become ubiquitous during 19 months of war, they said. So. It's like so far beyond just lying. It's such an inversion of reality. It's just crazy. It's just crazy, man. They bomb Gaza to smithereens and say, actually, Hamas did that. Actually, that was Hamas bombing themselves. Actually, we very carefully remove all of the civilians. We strap them to the front of APCs, use them as human shields. And the pain that puts us through is just. Let's go to clip number 14 here. Marjorie Taylor Greene is going off on AIPAC. Obviously, she came out saying the Republican Party has lost its way. It has been co-opted by Israel and is killing itself to serve their interests. And so, of course, AIPAC had to prove her right immediately. Let's watch.
Go ahead and be straight and honest about this. I'm absolutely furious. And as a matter of fact, AIPAC needs to register as a foreign lobbyist because they're breaking U.S. laws by donating to members of Congress and by taking them on a fully funded trip to Israel every single freshman member of Congress's year. They just took them over just recently and had them meet with the Prime Minister of Israel. But let's frame that correctly. They take them over to meet with the secular government of nuclear-armed Israel. Israel, who is in less than $400 billion in debt. Israel, who has taxpayer-funded health care and college. Israel is not hurting, and they've already proven that they are more than capable of not only defending themselves, but annihilating their enemies to the point of genocide. And that's what's happening in Gaza. And Matt, the reason why AIPAC is attacking me is because I dared to tell the truth. Well, Matt, you and I are good friends. We served together in Congress, and you know that I have taken zero money from AIPAC. As a matter of fact, I am so unapologetically American, I have a sign on the door of my office that tells all lobbyists, foreign lobbyists, to stay out of my office and that they have to follow the law. They have to follow the law and register as a foreign lobbyist and be clear about what country they represent. Because I represent America. As a matter of fact, I've been saying America first for a long time, but I'm getting to the point of saying America only. And I'll tell you why, Matt. It's because pretty much if you're under the age of 40, you have no hope for the future. We're $37 trillion in debt. People can't afford to buy a house. They can't afford rent. They can't afford insurance. They can't afford their bills. And we have HB1 visas stealing all these American jobs. And I'm sick and tired and fed up with it. So if AIPAC, who donates, by the way, to more Democrats than Republicans, as a matter of fact, they're all for Democrats, but they do donate to Republicans as well. But listen, if AIPAC wants to come after me and accuse me of betraying my American values, AIPAC, you know what? You can bring it on. I am totally ready for this. And this is a fight that I will fight and I will give it my all. And I can guarantee you, you're going to lose because America is fed up, Matt. They're fed up to here with funding foreign wars, funding foreign causes, funding foreign countries for foreign reasons that have nothing to do with Americans, while Americans work their ass off every day and pay their taxes and come home and they're living paycheck to paycheck and their credit cards are maxed out. I don't care anymore. I honestly don't care. So I'll burn this bridge to the ground and I will let the flames light the way. And because this is a fight that needs to happen.
If we were
100% Marjorie Taylor Greene, AIPAC attacks Representative Greene for breaking with Republicans on Israel. Disgusting. You know, it's not just Mike Johnson that's in Israel meeting with the, you know, West Bank settler terrorist organizations who are systematically, committing genocide against Christians and Muslims in the area. 25 congressional freshmen are there today, all representing combined several million dollars of AIPAC foreign lobbying fund. Yeah, register them as a foreign agency. Been saying it for years.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, USP grade. From thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm real interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see, yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm going to mix this up. And excited to see how this is gonna work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of hopefully of what is the unlimited power.
What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving y'all an update. It's been an hour past doing the one dropper of the ultramethylene blue USP grade. They AlexJonesStore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll need to probably take a, you know, an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well, so definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm zen feeling, so if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, y'all need to go to the Alex Jones store Methylene Blue.com and get your Methylene Blue today.
I'll continue to cover whatever I believe the most accurate, truthful news is, no matter what the effect is on me. And then you simply decide whether or not you want to back the undisputed OG organization of the last 31 years in the fight against the globalists. We had great success within 3 years of me getting on air on Access TV, the local radio that's syndicated. It's all hand of God on it, working through you.
You're working with the foreign banks and the military-industrial complex. This is all their idea.
You can follow people around. You can harass people. You can back up your banks, your buddies. But a revolution of peaceful information is coming, and when it comes time, you people are going to be brought to punishment.
You're lying to the public. It's disgusting.
This is reality. Truth is stranger than fiction. And I know my best work is ahead. And I know the tribulations we've been put through are part of God's larger plan. And I've learned a lot. And I've learned to be beyond humble and understand this is a sacred mission. But you're part of your own destiny and your own sacred mission. You better know good and evil's real. And you better know the devil's second biggest trick was convincing the world he didn't exist. His biggest trick is convincing the world good doesn't exist. Because I know that I'm a fallen creature. And I'm a sinner, and I have my struggles. But I love God, and I love justice, and I love truth. The globalists are the cheaters, the liars, the insecure ones. And it's time for us to recognize evil, recognize cheating, recognize fraud, and oppose it no matter who it's coming out of. Attack the sin. What alternate universe is this? What planet did I wake up in? Attack the lies. And you, Congressman Deutsch, are a liar and a fraud. And that's why I've been the most attacked. All hell broke loose when I stuck a Bohemian Grove, the only person at that time to read a footage out. When I made films about the USS Liberty, all hell broke loose. When I made films about 9/11 being an inside job, instantly, all hell broke loose. I was put under a national security investigation with the CIA and FBI directed, you find dirt and you put that guy in prison.
They also want to hear from Alex Jones. He was subpoenaed by the bipartisan House committee investigating the insurrection.
But because the country and the grand juries were completely corrupt, because of the grace of God, not because of anything I did, I've been protected. That's why I have no fear. Only the fear of failure. Only the anger that I'm not stronger. And that's why I ask you to support us in your word of mouth, your prayer, and financially. Because I am only as strong as you make me. I am a weapon of truth and war against tyranny in your hands. And I ask you to wield me. My only desire is to overthrow tyranny. My only desire is to unlock minds.
I've got one that can see.
My only desire is to empower humanity. My only desire is to seek the truth, because God is truth. I have been tempted by the devil himself, and only by the Holy Spirit have refused it.
All right, folks, find and share that video on Alex's X at Real Alex Jones. And remember to support us at thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com guarantees that we're not just in the fight, but continuing to expand. We got a lot of really, really big expansion plans coming up in the future. But it takes money, and it takes money to fight these people and win these battles. And thank you to everybody who stuck with us. I was talking to some of the people that were here yesterday with Gary Franchi, and they're like, so, you know, how many times have you had to take your stuff back and forth? And it's just been, you know, it's been exhausting. It's been a very exhausting and frustrating year or so, but we've survived, and, you know, this is just what it takes. We just got to bear it, get through it, get victory, turn it all around on him. But I just cannot tell you how thankful we are for your support at thealexjonesstore.com and infowarsstore.com, keeping us on the air, keeping us in the fight, and of course showing your pride, wearing the shirts around, wearing the hats around, telling everybody you know about us. It really makes an incredible difference. And right now, the Alex Jones blowout sale, you can take an extra 25% off some of these last chance designs. Will be the last chance to get some of these iconic designs. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com. We got a lot more to come in today's program. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls in the next hour, but I still got a lot of videos to get to, and we're going to move on from Israel once and for all. Because there's a lot of other stuff going on, including our old friend, my old nemesis, Lena Hidalgo, being censured and humiliated for being such a ridiculous failure. You love to see it.
Alex Jones has good genes. In fact, there's only one thing better than Alex's genes. Alex's genes on Methylene Blue. Just look at those pecs. That charm. The focus. Get your Methylene Blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good genes great again.
For a limited time, you can get this limited edition Murdered Out InfoWars shirt at thealexjonesstore.com with the American flag on the shoulder. It's historic, and it funds the operation. We've got other cool shirts that just came in as well. The new Liberty Bell 1776 Declaration of Independence shirt is out. It's limited edition, and it's got my signature on the back. That really triggers libtards. And then there's this limited edition. I weaponized the American people. It was actually you weaponized them, and we're winning. Get it all now at thealexjonesstore.com. Thanks for your support.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a lot of news still to get into. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls this hour. In the third hour, we'll be playing an interview we did yesterday evening with Gary Franchi of Next News Network, which was just a pleasure to meet him in person, as it's one of the few outlets alongside InfoWars that has survived this war for as long as they have. It really is something admirable, and it was just a good sort of freewheeling conversation about his experience as a White House correspondent, and we talked about Ron Paul for a while. I want to play some Ron Paul clips probably this hour, since this weekend is his 90th birthday. And we have to show respect and honor for the people that paved the way for us, like Ron Paul, who's been fighting this fight for about 40 years before I was born. So just incredible to see him still, you know, as sharp as ever. I want to play some videos just to remind you of how good things could have been, how we had so many opportunities in the decades before Trump to right this ship and vote for somebody whose policies made at least a little bit of sense, certainly a lot more than the policies that we got. So we'll do that a little bit later. If you want to call in this hour, the number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Give us a call now. We'll take your calls in this segment and the next. Let's go to some, I don't even want to go to these videos. I'm going to read this story. D.C. police commander placed on leave over deliberately falsifying crime data. As attention is turned to Washington, D.C. and crime in the district in the wake of former Doge employee being attacked, it has been revealed that a commander with the Metropolitan Police Department was placed on paid administrative leave in mid-May after being accused of falsifying crime data. Commander Michael Pulliam was placed on leave and under investigation for questionable changes to crime data, five law enforcement sources familiar with the investigation told NBC4. Pulliam was the commander of the 3rd District, which patrols the Adams, Morgan, and Columbia Heights neighborhood. The police union accused Pulliam of deliberately falsifying the data and claimed police supervisors in the department have been manipulating crime data to make it seem as though violent crime has fallen considerably in the district compared to 2024. Essentially what happens is they show up to a place where a crime has been reported, a felony offense of some sort, and they simply register it and note it as a significantly lesser crime to make it look like less felonies are being committed. They say when our members respond to the scene of a felony offense where their victim is reporting that a felony occurred, inevitably there will be a lieutenant or a captain that will show up on that scene and direct those members to take a report for a lesser offense. So instead of taking a report for a shooting or a stabbing or a carjacking, they'll order that officer to take a report for a theft or an injured person to the hospital or a felony assault, which is not the same type of classification. And in fact, when you charge things as a felony assault, apparently that type of crime is not categorized in the crime statistics, which I don't even really understand, but that's the case. Apparently they say when management officials are directing officers to take reports for felony assault, or if they're going back into police databases and changing offenses to felony assault is not a category of crime that's listed on the department's daily crime stats. It's also not something that's a requirement of the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting Program. So by changing criminal offenses from, for example, ADW bat or ADW gun to felony assault, that would avoid both the NPD and FBI from reporting that as part one or a felony offense, as a part one or felony offense. So they're rigging the numbers to make it look like the city's safer than it is. You know, what is the term for this mindset? I guess there's cheaters. It's the same mindset. You know, we've played the video before. This guy's playing pool. One guy's like, you know, we can lower crime rates by just not charging crimes. If you just don't arrest and charge the people, the crimes don't show up on the stats, and you can prove you lowered the numbers. It's like, what is the mindset behind this? What is the mindset? It does. I guess it's just for like personal aggrandizement, right? So you can point to it and say, look, under my leadership, you know, crime fell. You can point to the fake numbers of that. It just seems like there's a divorce between the real and the perceived. And I guess that would be the distinction. Do you care more about reality or the perception? Do you care about crime actually being lowered, or do you just want it to seem like it's lowered, you know, to justify whatever policies that you're putting forward? And again, it's not something that you can necessarily, like, you can't, like, write a policy to correct this. It's just a lack in general of honor, I guess you could say. Just not an honorable thing to do. It's just a weaselly thing to do. And it's just one of those things that's like, not only are we losing our ability to like maintain complicated systems, I think as things break down, we're going to lose our ability to even know whether those systems are being maintained or not. Like, which is, if you don't have any accurate information, you don't have any accurate way to judge the effects of your policies, you have no way to determine whether your policies are working or not. Just what are you supposed to do? What are you supposed to do in a democracy, in a republic, where you're supposed to be an informed voter, when the crime statistics are falsified and the racial aspects of the crime statistics are falsified? Constantly people are posting, you know, mugshots of Guatemalan dudes listed as white, right? Clearly just like black African guys listed as white in the statistics. Yeah, not out of an accident or an oversight, but because these people manipulate the stats. It's more important to them that they create the illusion that corresponds with their, you know, delusion than acknowledge reality, because reality can be uncomfortable. And so they'd rather lie about it, I guess. So again, how you're even supposed to run a country when you literally have no idea. Yeah, I receive accolades for low crime statistics. You receive chaos in the streets. Great stuff. What a deal. What a deal that is. Meanwhile, satellite images show Israel building up forces for possible ground invasion of Gaza. That is, of course, going to happen. It's not going to be easy for them because, despite what they tell you in their most sincere sounding voice, they have not really remotely hampered Hamas's ability to engage in combat. So they're basically stuck with the same problem that they were stuck with on October 8th, 2023, not having the manpower available to achieve the accomplishments that they set out to achieve. So good luck. Good luck with all that. Meanwhile, AI, YouTube is going to start AI age verification next week, apparently. There's been buzz around a not-so-new initiative from Google and YouTube that would put age verification in the hands of AI, and it's rolling out in just a few days. The new system will determine whether users are 18 or not, and it's being put in place next week. Before that, there are a few things to know. YouTube recently made an announcement that made some waves throughout its user base. A new age verification system will be instituted for all YouTube viewers, powered by an AI model that simply determines your age. One of the main reasons some users are heavily concerned about the new age verification system comes down to the method of determination. In the past, users would need to input their birthday, which would tell YouTube how old they were. From there, certain content would be locked or allowed, depending on if you were older than 18. The content wall is still set at 18, but instead of self-reporting, users won't have a say in how old Google's AI model thinks you are. YouTube's AI will likely be pretty good at guessing based on a few factors, but it's not going to be 100% accurate, and that's where users are getting worried. The company noted its determination process in a couple of announcement posts. Both stated that YouTube's AI would be able to tell how old the viewer was based on what videos they're searching for, the categories of videos watched, and the age of the account. Ideally, if you signed up for YouTube in 2007, the AI would have to reasonably assume you were 18. But what if you created the account recently, or it's a new alternative account, and that method is out the door? So then it comes down to what you've watched and searched for. I mean, what is the point? What is the point of any of this? What is the point of any of this? If YouTube determines you're under 18, whether that's true or not, there will be a few changes made to the account. First, personalized ads will be turned off. This is likely one of the driving factors for the new system, as selling personalized ads for minors isn't allowed in many regions. As most minors lie about their age on YouTube, the company could face legal trouble if found to be doing so. YouTube is going a step further past the legal protections, noting that the digital well-being tool will be enabled by default. That includes take-a-break messages and bedtime reminders. This app will warn users about privacy concerns when they comment or upload a video. Oh, good. So AI mommy is coming to put us to bed. Oh, hooray. That's just what we need. You know, I look around the world today. I say, you know what this world needs? It needs multinational mega corporations having super intelligent AI spying on you and telling you when you should go to bed and when you should turn down your music and what they think about the content that you're, you know, absorbing. And if you upload something, a reminder that you're uploading something. Are you sure you want to upload something? I guess we're just babies. I guess we're all just babies now. And because the American people can't be bothered to pay attention to what their children are looking at online, now we all have to be treated like babies. It's because we can't be trusted not to be uploading, you know, Elsa Spider-Man gore content on kids' accounts. We all have to be told by YouTube, it's time to go to bed now, sweetie. You know, I guess this is the option that we have to determine whether we want to live in a country that's peopled by intelligent adults who can think for themselves and make their own decisions and take on the responsibility of being a human being with free will, or if we all just need to be slaves of the AI babysitter. We're all just going to be under the thumb of the AI babysitter because apparently we can't determine what is good or bad for ourselves. We can't determine when to go to bed or what volume to put our headphones at. We all have to, it all has to be dictated to us by the evil psychopaths that put this whole program into operation in the first place. The same people that apparently are incapable of even making a dent in the hundreds of millions of child sex abuse material that is shared on a daily basis. They want to tell you when you need to go to bed because they know better than you. Again, I mean, it's the same thing that we say all the time for things like TikTok or things that, you know, people complain about. Well, China serves their, you know, citizens science videos and they send our kids twerking videos. I've always just said, okay, This is the question. Can you handle having technology? Can you handle not having your hand held? Can you manage being a human being with free will, or do you need your hand held? Do you need the bumpers up on the bowling lane? Those are the options. Either the government can dictate us what is good for us or not, or we can be adults and show that we have the capability of wielding just the most modest level of power responsibly. It's absolutely pathetic. And the most pathetic thing about it is that like at least China seems to have their citizens' best interests in mind. Like it might not even be that big of a deal if we had a government that even pretended to care about us. But we've got a government who is pretty open. I mean, it's pretty well established at this point that their primary motivating factor is eliminating the native population in this country and the rest of Europe. So, if we had an elite that cared about us, maybe it'd be fine. Maybe it'd be fine. Hey, maybe then they would have TikTok showing your kids science movies. But you know what would happen if we put these levels of control in the hands of the people that currently occupy the halls of power. They would show your kids nothing but transgender propaganda. Like they're just awful and they hate you. So we're really in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, mostly as a consequence of the really unrelenting incapacity for Americans to moderate their own behavior. It's very pathetic and sad. But I mean, what do you expect when you've got history teachers like this? From Infowars.com, history teacher says Incan child sacrifices were, quote, voluntary and kind, claiming that those who object to them have a, quote, white education. And yeah, this is where it's going. I actually have a couple videos about this. We'll go first to clip number 15, where this beautiful, loving, liberal woman is here to tell us how advanced the Incas were. Let's watch.
You were telling me the Spanish looked at this and said uncivilized? The Inca.
Yes.
Built the Moray Terraces as an agricultural laboratory because each separate circle created a different microclimate so they could figure out exactly what to grow at what elevation.
Hold on. They created microclimates so they could tell. Yeah, it's a hole in the ground, lady. You're looking at a hole in the ground, okay? You're looking at a stepped incline hole in the ground, lady. They did that to generate microclimates to study what grew best at different elevations. Okay, it's a hole in the ground, lady. That's a hole in the ground. Okay, sorry. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. Microclimates were being created. I mean, sure, you may have seen the cathedral at Seville and think that was impressive, but have you seen a hole in the ground? Have you ever seen terraced steps on an incline? I mean, these Incas, it was really next level for them. I mean, sure, the Spanish had guns and the written word and books. And I believe by that point had even developed the novel. And sure, they had cultural traditions stretching back thousands of years. I mean, sure, they had a highly developed aristocratic caste system born of hundreds and hundreds of years of continuity. But I mean, had they ever created steps? I mean, you're going to call that civilized? Have you ever seen a hole in the ground, though? Okay, back to the lady telling us how uncivilized the Spanish were compared to their the glorious Incan superiors. Let's watch.
Who cultivated 44 types of corn and 4,000 types of potatoes.
Whoa.
The Inca, who built this stuff 600 years ago, and it is still standing because it's all earthquake-proof. The Inca, who created salt funds that still to this day aren't privatized.
Pause. We got to pause. It's too much. I'm forgetting the stupid crap she said when she says other stupid crap. Okay, sorry. We got the hole in the ground is microclimate. The hole in the ground is also earthquake-proof. Incredible engineering. Incredible engineering. Did you know? Do you know that the hole in the ground is earthquake proof? Incredible, incredible stuff. 4,000 types of potatoes? Really? Why though? How many types of potatoes do you need? I don't believe you. Frankly, I don't believe that claim. I don't think there are 4,000 types of potatoes. That's a lot. 4,000 types of potatoes, lady? Are you sure? Are you sure? Which is 60 types of corn or something ridiculous? Okay. All right. 4,000 types of potato. What was the last thing she said? Sorry, can we back it up a few seconds? It's too much. It's too much. All right. We got microclimate terraced, control. Pits, I guess. We got 4,000 types of potato. My mind is blown. Here I thought, conducting Latin mass was the height of civilization. I didn't realize 4,000 potatoes. I mean, my goodness. Okay. I mean, that's more varieties of potatoes than Italians have varieties of spaghetti. We got a poster on the wall at our house. It has all the different types of spaghetti. There's spaghetti you've never even heard of. They got some crazy stuff. There's the super thin ones that look like bird's nests. There's the rigatoni. You got the penne. I mean, you look at that and you go, there's 100 types of pasta here. 98 of them are superfluous, right? It's all the same. 4,000 types of potato. I'm sorry. I've watched this video before. I missed the 4,000 potatoes thing. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I need to rethink. I heard the thing about the temperature control and the microclimates. I remember that. But I don't know. Now she mentions 4,000 types of potato. Maybe they were the more civilized. Maybe we had something to learn from them. Let's go back to the video for a little bit, shall we?
Because it's all earthquake proof. The Inca, who created salt flats that still to this day aren't privatized. They're all sharing it from the same hot spring in the mountain.
No way.
And everyone gets a share.
Everyone gets a share.
Not to mention Coricancha, Machu Picchu, the fact that all of their cities were made intentionally in the shapes of animals that were important to them.
Oh, they're made.
This reminds me of exactly what happened in Tenochtitlan when Cortez laid eyes on that city for the first time. He wrote in his diary that the temples were grander than anything he would have seen in Sevilla. Yeah, you're telling me the Spanish saw this and they said, nah, inferior.
Yeah, no, they didn't have the wheel. They didn't have the written word. They performed child sacrifice. They were basically living in the Stone Age. She's like, 600 years ago. All right. 600 years ago, the college at Oxford was like 300 years old. But they have got holes in them. No, but they have terraced holes in the ground. It's incredible. It's incredible, isn't it? What are we doing here, lady? What is this? Go enjoy Machu Picchu. It looks beautiful. Go have a wonderful time. Appreciate the Inca. Why bring your seething leftist inferiority complex along with you?
I need support.
We are maxed out. And I can do so much more in offense, guaranteed beat them even faster in court. And got this other stuff going on. I'll leave it at that with the Justice Department, the good guys coming in, and the task force on weaponization, that I need funds. So I need you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, subscribe as your monthly donation for $30 a month as a VIP, and know you're doing that bare minimum of support, cancel any time. Not a very hard commitment. You just do it month to month. You charge $30. You're a VIP. And when you want a t-shirt or you want a supplement, you get it, because it'll just build up in your account. $40 to spend in the store. You spend 30, you get 40 automatic discounts on everything, special sales, special offers. I'm asking everyone to commit who's never supported the broadcast by buying anything to become a VIP today at thealexjonesstore.com. And then you know you're doing the monthly support. Ever have an issue, don't want to do it, cancel. One click, it's your profile. But by being a VIP, you get massive discounts, special offers, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And it's a way to show your support. We need your backing. I am 100% dauntless. If anything, I get overheated because I've got so much energy and I'm so angry at these people and it bleeds off into my life. I need your backing. I'm backing you. Quite frankly, if you don't back me and my crew, what we're doing, you're nuts. And I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying you're crazy. Evil hates this transmission. We've got their number. And if you don't back the organizations fighting with everything they've got for you, because we're all in this together, well, you've rolled over. You've run up the white flag, quite frankly, and that's what this is. People ask, man, thanks for fighting. Thanks for never giving up. Wow, why does it break your spirit? It intensifies my spirit. To know we're up against pure evil, and we're turning the tide, and we're winning, and then to know that if we don't fight hard, they're going to win and commit humanity to a nightmare of evil? You think stuff's bad now? You ain't seen nothing yet. Thank me for fighting for my own future and yours collectively? There's not even a question of fighting these people. Look at them. They've got to be opposed. People tend to think, being persecuted is, oh, you want to stay away from that? Oh, so you want to stay away from the fight? No, it's like John Paul Jones said when he got commissioned as the head of the U.S. Navy, and Riley was starting, and he was writing to the Continental Congress. He said, I only want the fastest ships. I only want to be sent into the main war zones and direct action. They said, here, it's our fastest ship. Go out. He immediately goes out and engages and takes over all these British ships, 2-3 times the size. It's a ramming straight into them. Well, that's what I want to do. I only want the fastest ships. I want to go directly into action. I want to go 24 hours a day. I want reporters all over the country. I want to be 50 times stronger against the enemy. I want 50 times the audience. I want victory. You think what we've done to the enemy has been effective so far? It's nothing. I have not yet begun to fight. So support yourself. Support us. Do it. Or be conscious that you didn't fight when the time was right. You hesitated. You took this as another entertainment venue, just some other show, just more talk. This ain't talk. This is the targeting coordinates to take down the enemy. This is the Death Star plans. This is Sting, the Goblin Slayer. They hate this blade. This operation is a sword that is plunged politically, culturally, spiritually into the hearts of our enemies over and over and over again. They hate it. It's a standard of their defeat. It's a symbol of their weakness. That's what we're doing here. This is serious business. So I'm coming to you asking you to continue to commission us in this fight. We've already delivered you more victories against the enemy than any other media operation in the world. And I'm asking you again for all of our collective futures to come to our aid now more and take your fight to the 110% level. Tell the truth. Be accurate. Stand against evil. Have courage. Until it's not even having courage, it's what you are.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. We're going to go off to your phone calls momentarily. I do want to tell you about a new sale at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you, it is the Alex Jones Store blowout sale this weekend only. It's your last chance to get some of the really popular limited run designs on hats, shirts, coins, mugs, and hoodies. If you get any 5 items from the sale, you get 20% off. Get 10 items from the sale and get 25% off. Plus, you're getting additional discounts if you're a VIP member. And All the supplements, of course, are available as well. Many of those on discount, especially if they're one of the newer supplements. They always come with an introductory price. But of course, the hats, the shirts, the designs are just classic. There's a lot of classic ones. There's a lot of, you know, new ones. There's new ones practically every day. If you haven't been to the site in a little while, go check out what is new at thealexjonesstore.com. Make a purchase, support the fight, and know that you have done a very important, you have played an important role in the retaking of our country and the stopping of the globalist scheme to enslave the world. I'm going to go to one more video about these Incas, and then we'll go out to some of your calls. I see Marcos in California has called in about the Incas. So this is clip number 16, history teacher, talking about how kind and loving the Incas were when they were murdering children. Let's watch.
I will die on this hill. I'm specifically talking about the Inca here. We're not talking about the Mexica. That's a whole separate type of sacrifice. If we're just looking at Tehuantin Suyu, the Quechua people of the Incan Empire, they practiced sacrifices like most other civilizations throughout history did in times of crisis. So famine, natural disasters. But the unique thing about the Quechua is that when you're looking at like the Incan civilization, you essentially have the elites and then you have everyone else. Sacrifices were volunteers from the elite class because they believed that the elites were closer to the gods and could therefore appease them better. Also, in terms of sacrifice, they were kind about it. Hear me out. Because unlike the Mexica, when you're like ripping out a still beating heart out of someone's chest, the Inca would intentionally use coca leaves and would use chicha and would drug up the sacrifice and then leave them on a mountain, a whole chilly mountain, to be exposed to the elements.
Oh,
which,
okay.
If you're a volunteer sacrifice where you're heavily drugged before you die. Also, I mean, I can equate human sacrifice throughout history to so many things. And I think the fact that a lot of people are commenting, oh, but the sacrifice, is again indicative of the fact that you have received a quite white education because you are knowing them for the bad things that they have done and not all of the wonders that they accomplished. So I hope that this maybe helps you understand a different part of my most favorite civilization of all time, the Inca.
Yeah, that is a great point. That's a great point. I should have thought about that. So instead of stabbing somebody, they would drug them and leave them on the side of a mountain. I didn't realize how enlightened they were. Matt Walsh said, quote, I don't know what's more deranged. The idea that it's kind to leave somebody to die on a mountaintop as long as you give them cocaine and hallucinogens ahead of time, or the idea that an 8-year-old child sacrifice could in any sense be considered a volunteer who consented to this practice. Yeah, I guess this is just the like end result of just decades and decades of just anti-white sentiment being poured into people, which is funny because obviously she projects that onto you, right? You've had a very white education where they taught you about things. I say, oh, it's very what you learned about the bad things these people did. No, we learned about the good things too. It's just, you know, making hats for llamas, very cute, but they commit child sacrifice. So they're not exactly an enlightened, progressive society exactly. Okay. They were Stone Age, undeveloped savages. That's what they were actually. They did good things too. They made trails. So, have I told you about the microclimates? Do you have any idea how many thousands of types of potatoes they had? So we learn about the good things too. It's just the bad things happened also. So what would the solution be? To not teach the bad things or to teach the bad things as good things? I guess that's the tactic she's going with. So I guess the white education tells you the Incas committed child sacrifice, and that's not a good thing. It's because they were superstitious and backwards and hadn't been enlightened and were still developing as a society. And I guess in her interpretation, I mean, that's bad. That's white people telling you about the past and about how bad things did happen in the past. No, she wants you, what she wants is you to be taught that there are child sacrifices, but that that was a good thing and that that was perfectly equal in justice and, you know, civilizational accomplishment as, you know, the backward savages from Seville, right? Again, I actually have studied the Incas like quite a bit, funnily enough. I actually really like the Incas, but you don't have to act like they are superior to the Spanish in the 1600s to appreciate or respect the Incas. I think they're pretty cool. I do think they were a lot less savage and a lot less brutal than a lot of their contemporaries in the South American or Central American continent. That's true. But they were not more advanced than the Spanish, dummy. And why you would even have to make that distinction. And so again, it's just this situation where, you know, they genuinely like, they want to see the world in sort of a hierarchy of worth. And they're mad that the Spanish are higher than the Incas on that, and they want to bring them down. When in reality, it's just, yeah, it's different. Every society practiced human sacrifice. Well, yeah, but not for 2,000 years or more. So, what the hell are you talking about? And wasn't even necessarily Christianity. I mean, the Romans abhorred child sacrifice. It's one of the big differences between them and Carthage. Carthage practiced child sacrifice. And yeah, there too, the elite would sacrifice their children. Again, she says that as if that's like a justification. It's like, don't worry, the babies they killed were rich. What? All right. Marcos in California, what's your take on the Incas, the Incan Empire, sir? You're on the air.
Well, yeah, actually, I kind of wanted to speak more about the Aztecs, but thanks for taking my call, Harrison.
Sure.
I was listening to a lecture by Professor Roy Casagrandes out of Austin, and he does a really great lecture on this subject. So he was saying some more about the Aztecs, that the bovine that they brought onto the swamps that the Aztecs used to cultivate as compost to regenerate their crops more so than the ground they would need to go fallow for many decades was very advanced for the time to support about 8 million people, more than anybody on the planet at the time. I'm Hispanic, so I'm getting back to more like of a Mesoamerican diet, and it's really helped me getting back to the corn, the squash, and the beans. And I realized that, you know, that high-fat European diet has just been wrecking my my body. Hmm. So, I mean, and it kind of goes in with the WEF, like eat the bugs kind of thing, because the Aztecs did eat the bugs. I don't think it was all that a bad thing, you know, because they could process it. Also, the Aztecs had a very advanced calendar, and they saw the Europeans as killing just to kill when they would massacre villages. But and the Aztecs would not take weapons into war. They would take slaves for those sacrifices, and the meat that they would eat of those sacrifices was kind of like the WEF, like you'll get your 1 pound of flesh per year.
It was a treat.
It was a treat because they had a protein diet. Going to the Hopi prophecies and the Navajo prophecies, like each root race is commanded over one of the four elements. So the natives are the earth, the Asians are of the air, the blacks are supposed to preserve the water, and the whites have fire. And we won't escape this next cataclysm unless we work together. And I think that the native populations were really in tune with the earth and what they were entrusted to keep on this earth. And if given time, they would have.
Oh, I love this guy. Finish your thought.
Given time, they would have advanced their technology. And also, yes, you did mention the Greeks did give sacrifice like to the Minotaur. So just over time, they would have advanced. But at the time, they were in tune with nature.
There's a bunch of interesting stuff there. Did the Aztecs have a good star chart? I thought that was the Mayans. Again, it's not even like to be disrespectful to the Incans or the Mayans, because yeah, everybody's culture has to develop. And you know, I should do like a book report or something, but that Will Durant has the story of civilization, and it was written in like the, I think it was published in the 30s, but it was written sort of in the early 1900s, which was the peak of civilization. Like, we've pretty much just declined since then. And, you know, history books written around then, there's no ambiguity about like, or, you know, effort to make it seem like all civilizations are totally equal. To them, they're like, no, there's kind of like steps that you can go up, and there's uncontacted tribes that are still sort of at the lowest level where they haven't developed even like basic organization. They're still sort of in a matriarchy, like steps from like matriarchy to patriarchy to, you know, small clan government to larger clan government. And, you know, especially back then when there were still a lot of uncontacted tribes or still swaths of Africa that had never been mapped, stuff like that. It would just go through and go, okay, this tribe is Stone Age. So we can look at this tribe and go, how did everybody in the Stone Age act? This is probably a pretty good, you know, view on it. So it's like, okay, you're looking at the civilizational development. Incas aren't as high as the Spanish. Does that mean they aren't human? No. Does that mean that they aren't, you know, worth consideration? No, obviously not. It's just a recitation of facts. Just, they were not as developed as the Spanish. Spanish had guns and sailboats and the written word and all this other stuff. And then there's this, but then there's this effort to like want to invert that and go, actually, not only were the Incas not behind the Spanish, they were more advanced than the Spanish because they had cities that looked like animals. And it's like, what the hell are you talking about? You make your cities look like llamas and that's somehow evidence of your superiority. That's the argument she's making. So I don't know. It's all nonsense. I think the Spanish and, you know, their campaign into Mexico is one of the most epic stories in all of humanity. The burning of the boats, this tiny contingent. Of course, everybody knows the stories. It wasn't the Spanish against the Aztecs and just the Spanish against the Aztecs. It was the Spanish against the Aztecs along with all of the people that the Aztecs had subjugated and abused. So it was really a collection of smaller tribes creating an alliance with the Spanish against the Aztecs. And I've told the story before where they're walking through the city of the Aztecs and they're like blown away by it. And sure, they're like, this is amazing. It's marvelous. It's bigger than any European city. It's got these huge pyramids. It's got canals. It's got flowers going everywhere. And they're like, this is just amazing. This is incredible. And the Aztecs are showing them around and they're really proud and they're, you know, here's our market. Here's this. And they're like, and you know, come look at our temple. And the Spanish are like, okay, I bet it's beautiful too. And then they take him into a room and it's just like intestines hanging from the ceiling, skulls stacked up the entire way, some priest like sawing the heart out of a child. They're like, hi, welcome. And the Spanish are just like, oh my God, what is this? So, you know, it's like, yeah, you can look at the Aztec civilization and I'm sure on the surface it was very nice, but then at the heart of it was this satanic sacrifice, blood drinking, you know, heart of darkness. And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't blame the Spanish for being like, okay, we have landed in hell. Time to conquer the demons. If you walk into a room and the whole room is covered in gore and the Aztecs are like, what do you think? What do you think about our temple? What do you think about our decorations of the temple? Just like, yeah, I don't necessarily blame the Spanish for being like, we got to get out of here. We got to get out of here. Kill these people. Let's move on. Thank you very much for the call, Marcos. Let's go to Alex in Northern Virginia. Go ahead, Alex. You are on the air.
Good morning, Harrison.
Good morning.
So I just wanted to bring up real quick. A couple of days ago, we spoke about a letter that was written to President Trump, and it turns out that yesterday there was another letter that was written to the White House administration, and it's from, I believe, Irish and British writers, 100 of them. And they all calling for the secession and anything that has to do with supporting Israel, whether it's business, whether it's, you know, 8,000 of their forms of potatoes, whatever it is, they are now... There's that letter that's floating around. There's a couple of letters. There's two of them, actually, that came out yesterday. One was sort of against the administration for supporting Israel. And they can't hide anything that they're doing anymore. It's just now everything's coming out to light, you know?
I hadn't seen this. I don't know if this is what you're talking about. No, this must be something different. Spike Lee, Adam McKay, and over 2,000 writers decry Trump's un-American actions. Is that the one you're talking about?
That's the other letter against them. But it could be found in the, The Guardian and the Times of Israel.
Okay. And they're just asking them to stop supporting Israel. So, I mean, what are they going to do at this point? I mean, I had a story actually, because I was going to bring this up because, you know, they write these headlines that are like, Republicans scramble to deal with, you know, the defection over Israel. And it's like, well, I think it was Epstein in this case. And it's like, well, you just have to A, stop lying about it. B, just do what you said you were going to do. Like, they're in this weird situation where, I don't know, it's like you want to get back together with your wife, but you won't stop cheating on her. You know, it's like you got to stop doing the thing that's making us mad, and then we'll stop being mad. But they're like, we want to keep supporting Israel to the hilt, but what are we going to do about everybody being mad? So they want to have their cake and eat it too. Where do they go from here, Alex?
Eventually, at some point, they're going to have to listen to the people.
Yeah.
At some point, nobody. It can't be hidden anymore. All their dark deeds is coming out in the light, and eventually righteousness is going to take over. Real quick, to the previous caller, I just want to add that the Aztecs and the Incans, they all had technology for gateways. And this is proven because I forgot the name of the mountain in Peru. There's a mountain in Peru where on the side of it, it's etched in a 40-foot-high gateway. And on top of that gateway, that doorway, there looks like something could go in the top of it to activate it, whether it's a plate, or whatever, but it's circular.
I know what you're talking about. And I commented on the Inca stuff on X, and I had a lot of comments underneath of people pointing out, like, you know, the Incas were not the ones that built Machu Picchu. They arrived after. And you can see in the Inca constructions, you have these like really, it does seem advanced. It seems hard to even fathom there's the gate of the gods cut into the Peruvian mountain. Yeah, that's a crazy thing. I'm glad you brought that up. But you know, they'll show.
It sure is.
It's like all of these rocks that are like really perfectly cut, totally flush with one another. And it's like half the wall looks like that. And then on top of that, the rocks are just kind of piled on. You can almost see like, all right, this was one civilization, and then another civilization came and built on top of it. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of, you know, pre-diluvian civilization, not just there, but that spread all over the world. I mean, look at that. We're showing the doorway to the god right now in Peru. I mean, I don't know what force creates something like that. I don't know how you do that without advanced tools, but a little bit more compelling than the 8,000 tomato potatoes, I have to say. I have to say, the incredible carved out of a rock, mysterious doorway to nowhere is significantly more compelling to me in terms of this was an advanced civilization than the microclimates in the hole in the ground. But she's not making that argument. You're a crazy kooky conspiracy theorist if you think they had some sort of advanced, you know, rock forming technology prior to the advent of heavy machinery. Interesting stuff. Thank you for the call, Alex. Let's go to Tax Slave in Pennsylvania. I want to talk about the Truman Show narrative we're living in. Go ahead. Tax Slave, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Smith.
Hello.
Let us step into the Truman Show, where the government is our friend. The government provides all that we need and want. They protect us from evil bad men. And they are just virtuous and kind. And in fact, the government's run by people that are public servants that sacrifice what they could have possibly been in the private sector, to sacrifice their whole life to serving us. Now, let's go out into the atmosphere and open up the door and look behind that. The government is a criminal gang of murderers, thieves, thugs, and liars. And that's what they do. And I, I just am, you were talking earlier, I don't particularly recall the subject. However, everything that you were talking about, and I listen to you every day, and I really love your show. Everything that we talk about are just instances of murderers, thieves, thugs, and liars. They steal our money, they kill people, they boss us around with their petty regulations and such, and they lie to us about everything. I mean, I had a list. I won't go through it. But if you go back, for example, to, like, Remember the Maine, the Lusitania, everything on forward, everything is a freaking lie. Pardon my almost French.
Yeah.
And I'm just appalled that we're living in such a false reality. Life could be beautiful. We could be. Oh, and by the way, it ties into the whole notion of the Incas and their child sacrifice and all that. It wasn't the Incas per se. It was their government.
Mm.
It was their rulers. And it's the ruling class that just believes that they are beyond any moral values that, we subscribe to. And by the way, with the internet and, with media and so forth, I mean, it's getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, going back to the Maine, I mean, that was yellow journalism was started, by Hearst with that, I'll give you a war if you want it, kind of thing. And with the advent of technology as it is, we are just so far down a rotten hole. And I just hope, I truly believe that the only way out is to disconnect. And at some point, I'm going to disconnect from all of this nonsense and technology and just give it up.
Well,
honestly, I think that's the only point.
It's, the beautiful thing about the Truman Show is you brought up at the beginning of the call is, the point of it isn't, necessarily to be an exact example of our real world or anything. I mean, people have likened it to social media and stuff. To me, the point is you can have everything you need. You can have a perfect life. You can have an ideal cage and it's still not enough. There's something more that humans intrinsically strive for, even if everything is taken care of. And that really gets to the heart of, like, I think the difference between, it's this unspoken, almost like unidentifiable difference between the way people like myself and you approach things and then the things we see out of the normies in this country. And it's sort of this just like ineffable difference where it's hard to pin down. You can't quite pin it down, but I think that's a good way of putting it. There are those of us who would try to escape the dome, and there are those of us who love the dome. And it really comes down to that. There are those of us who, even if you're comfortable, even if you're safe, you're a slave, you're a prisoner. You want to break free. You have this drive to see what's beyond this and to, suffer and fail if that's what it has to be. But you'd rather suffer, you'd rather fail with free will than, be a comfortable slave. And that really is an important spiritual distinction that I'm glad you highlight with the Truman Show narrative. Don't let them convince you that everybody believes the lies. When Benjamin Netanyahu stands up and says Gaza has been flattened by Hamas, he doesn't believe it, the guy he's telling doesn't believe it, and nobody watching him believes it. And the facade is going to fall eventually.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy, he's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule that should have two hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1, it's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here. Look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 to 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food. Stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, this is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. In the next segment, we're going to play an interview we recorded yesterday with Gary Franchi. And frankly, we were having such a good time talking to each other. We went over the time we were supposed to go. So if you want to see the full interview, we're going to upload it onto X at InfoWars. Make sure you're following at InfoWars. Follow me at Harrison H. Smith. Go follow our guest, Gary Franchi, at Gary Franchi. We had a great conversation. We're going to play almost all of it here, but if you want to see the whole thing, without commercial breaks, go to X and at InfoWars. And it'll also be on InfoWars.com and band.video. And, of course, Gary Franchi was in town because he was going to Ron Paul's 90th birthday party. I'll be there tomorrow with a whole who's who of, you know, libertarian and liberty-minded individuals. So I'm very excited for that. And I wanted to intro this interview with a clip from Ron Paul just being way ahead of the curve and right about everything. Here is the great man, Ron Paul, from all the way back in the early 2000s. Let's watch.
Madam Speaker, I have a few questions for my colleagues. What if our foreign policy of the past century is deeply flawed and has not served our national security interests? What if we wake up one day and realize that the terrorist threat is a predictable consequence of our meddling in the affairs of others, and has nothing to do with us being free and prosperous? What if propping up repressive regimes in the Middle East endangers both the United States and Israel? What if occupying countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and bombing Pakistan is directly related to the hatred directed toward us? What if someday it dawns on us that losing over 5,000 American military personnel in the Middle East since 9/11 is not a fair trade-off for the loss of nearly 3,000 American citizens, no matter how many Iraqi, Pakistani, and Afghan people are killed or displaced? What if we finally decide that torture, even if called enhanced interrogation technique, is self-destructive and produces no useful information, and that contracting it out to a third world nation is just as evil? What if it is finally realized that war and military spending is always destructive to the economy? What if all wartime spending is paid for through the deceitful and evil process of inflating and borrowing? What if we finally see that wartime conditions always undermine personal liberty? What if conservatives who preach small government wake up and realize that our interventionist foreign policy provides the greatest incentive to expand the government? What if conservatives understood once again that their only logical position is to reject military intervention and managing an empire throughout the world? What if the American people woke up and understood that the official reasons for going to war are almost always based on lies and promoted by war propaganda in order to serve special interests? What if we as a nation came to realize that the quest for empire eventually destroys all great nations? What if Obama has no intention of leaving Iraq? What if a military draft is being planned for the wars that will spread if our foreign policy is not changed? What if the American people learn the truth, that our foreign policy has nothing to do with national security, that it never changes from one administration to the next? What if war and preparation for war is a racket serving the special interests?
What if President Obama is completely wrong about Afghanistan and turns out worse than Iraq and Vietnam put together? What if Christianity actually teaches peace and not preventive wars of aggression? What if diplomacy is found to be superior to bombs and bribes in protecting America? What happens if my concerns are completely unfounded? Nothing. But what happens if my concerns are justified and ignored? Nothing good. And I yield back the balance of my time.
A monumental and historic speech that we should have listened to. Can you imagine how different the world would be if we had taken that sage advice from Dr. Ron Paul 30 years ago? More on the other side. Interview with Gary Franchi coming up. Don't go anywhere, folks. Share those links. We'll be right back.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. Tell people the short-term effect and then now the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before. Gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before I work my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. Give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support, theallstarsword.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know.
I like it better than doing like a five-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
See that? No crash.
Right.
If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. Now's the time. Get the Methylene Blue, bare minimum, thealexstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We're about to go to this interview we did yesterday with Gary Franchi. Again, the full thing, we went a little bit long. The full thing will be uncut, uninterrupted on X at InfoWars. Go follow InfoWars. Share those links at InfoWars. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. Follow Alex at Real Alex Jones. And, of course, support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. The Alex Jones Store blowout sale this weekend only. You're getting an additional 20 or 25% off on all hats, shirts, coins, mugs, and hoodies, especially the last chance run of some of these designs out. Once they're sold out, that will be, it'll be gone forever. So don't miss it. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com. Take advantage of the 25% off blowout sale and enjoy this conversation I had with Gary Franchi of Next News Network. Here it is. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live from InfoWars Studios, InfoWars.com/show, joined in studio by Gary Franchi. He is, of course, the founder and chief White House correspondent of Next News Network. You can follow Next News Network on YouTube at Next News Network, and you can follow Gary on X at Gary Franchi. Gary, welcome to the show, sir.
Harrison, it's great to be here. I'm on hallowed ground.
It's great to have you here. It's great to finally meet you in person. I feel like I've been watching Next News Network for 20 years. How long have y'all been around?
Yeah, we've been around for 20 years. Yeah, or more. I mean, well, the Next News Network officially started in 2012, in response to the Ron Paul presidential campaign. Cause we ran the super PAC at the time. There was a lot of momentum behind that. And then, of course, we decided to move that into media production after we saw with the RNC and the media how they treated Congressman Paul.
Right.
I said, I'm never going to let that happen again.
Right.
You know, we're going to create a media environment where we can control the narrative, we can correct the narrative, and we can support the candidate that we wanted. And of course, you know, as time went on, that candidate ended up being Donald J. Trump.
Right.
We got, you know, we had at one point over 70 million views on YouTube, and we were attacked by the mainstream media immediately following the 2016 election. You know, front page of Drudge is blaming us for electing Donald Trump. They changed the entire algorithm
right
at that point because, you know, fake news is running the show.
Yeah.
So we caught them all off guard. We helped elect Trump, in 2016, you know, and it's been a minefield ever since.
Yeah. No, I was going to say just the fact y'all are still around. I mean, obviously you deserve it because the quality is so good, but the fact you've survived the various rounds of censorship and deplatforming, yeah. What's been your, how have you survived this whole time?
Well, basically, you know, sometimes you just gotta follow your gut.
Yeah.
And you, with the topics that we cover, you can sort of sense, like when Adam, I remember when Adam Schiff was threatening, talk over vaccines, and he was sending letters to YouTube over that. And, you know, we recognize certain narrative, assaults that were happening. So we would just preemptively remove content so that we could, you know, maintain the audience. I mean, we have 2.25 million followers now. And, you know, it's like the worst feeling in the world of having to remove content from the past, because we've covered so many different topics.
Right.
But, you know, you had the whole COVID thing, and then you had the election. But we detected early on censorship back in 2015. We'd see videos that would suddenly, like, lose monetization.
Right.
And it was because ISIS was being mentioned. Mm. And but this was all stealth. Eventually YouTube came out and they started to put green dollar signs before a video. You could see that it was monetized. And, you know, it's a huge process of understanding, you know, what keywords are triggering things, what you can and cannot say. Because when they're constantly moving the goalposts, you're literally walking through a minefield.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and but it's worth it, though, because it that's, like it or not, that's how you reach normies. That's, you know, people are watching YouTube. You have to be on these platforms if you want to reach out to people. Obviously, we tried as hard as we could. You know, they had a bullseye on us. So we had to create our own, you know, off platform things, which is also necessary. But, you know, why is it so important to you to stay on YouTube? You haven't jumped ship to Rumble yet. I mean, a lot of people are.
Well, we are on Rumble. We do have a following on Rumble.
Sure.
Our X is actually really performing well. But I mean, YouTube is where our primary audience is.
Right.
I mean, we've got about 140,000 followers on X. I think we have about 40,000 to 50,000 on Rumble. So, you know, we do, that's our primary audience. So, you know, we want to cater to them. We want to make sure that they receive the message. And, you know, there's always the off, you know, the off time when the algorithm kind of takes a break and pushes us out into like the general population,
right,
if you will. So we have to take advantage of every opportunity to get the message out. And, you know, it's effective.
Yeah. Well, it's just amazing to me because, again, I've been watching you guys for so long, and I just think about the sort of trajectory all these different organizations have taken. And there are a lot of channels I used to watch that don't exist anymore. It's amazing that Next News Network is there. But then you think about the fact that you have to be there in the trenches fighting for everything you get. And then you've got these other, you know, networks like the Young Turks that just let us put you on Roku. We're going to put you on the front page. We're going to push you out to everybody. And, it's unfair, but you've actually earned your success, which is
something. I should point out that, in February of 23, we were officially demonetized by YouTube.
Oh, wow.
And we had to cut like 98% of our staff.
Oh, wow.
We were on life support. But there was a miracle breakthrough when, Google Whistleblowers Zach Voorhees testified in front of the Texas Senate.
Right.
And when he testified, he brought forth documents that he had pulled out 6 years prior that showed how Next News Network was like our channel was listed on internal documents with weighted numbers on how they suppressed the content. So he goes in front of the Texas Senate Committee on State Affairs, and he says, here's the document. These guys are being suppressed. And they say, well, what do we do? And they said, well, he suggests that Google be subpoenaed. What happens next is I decided to – so we find out the committee votes unanimously to subpoena Google, find out what happened. It's all part of this election interference thing. So I decided in like a Hail Mary to bring on the head of the committee onto my YouTube channel and interview him after he had already sent the letter to Google.
Right.
So I say to him, I go – and I'm basically telegraphing – like, okay, what happened? Did they respond? Who responded? Is this now public record? And he said, it is. So whatever they send, whatever Google sends to Texas is public record. So what happens next is, I said, well, can I submit a FOIA for those records? He says, yes, you can. So I waited a couple weeks for more data to come into Texas. I hit the FOIA. I get a phone call from the clerk and of the Senate, and she says, Mr. Franchi, we just want to clarify what you're asking for. And what I was asking for was any documents that were related to Next News Network, any communications between third parties, government agencies, NGOs, or any other entity that Google or YouTube may have communicated with throughout the process of demonetization. Because we had reapplied six times. We deleted over 30,000 videos. Over 1 billion views were removed from our channel and to maintain compliance. And so I said, this is what we want. And she said, just be aware that we do have to notify Google of your request. I said, fine. So my wife and I go off to New York for the Madison Square Garden MAGA rally. And we're after that beautiful event. We're on the way to the airport and I get a message from the Texas Senate and they say, yeah, we've notified Google. And then within 24 hours, my channel was remonetized after.
Well, what do you know?
What do you know? Like, it took the state of Texas, you know, to stand behind Franchi, you know, right, a little bit of weight, but that's how we survived that.
Man, that's so, I mean, just the battles that have gone on in the information war. I mean, really having to wrestle free speech out of the hands of these tyrants. It's amazing hearing all these stories, and the way it goes back and forth. And, you know, part of me is like, this has helped me understand why, perhaps like the hardcore libertarianism of just like the government shouldn't do anything. It's like, no, you need the government for some things. Gary Franchi, the individual, has no ability to fight back against Google. That's why we have the collective power of the government. If it's not stepping in to stop the corporations from oppressing us, it's no better than the government oppressing us, which I sort of want to get into because you're actually here in Texas. You're going down to Ron Paul's 90th birthday party. Obviously, you got started with Ron Paul. So many of us, you know, were introduced to politics through Ron Paul. And, you know, it's just amazing having this guy as this living legend who, you know, helped to not just be a figure for the right, but like actually inform our ideas. And it's always a distinction between the sort of heroes of the left, where you might see some liberal chick wearing a Ruth Bader Ginsburg shirt. She has no idea what Ruth Bader Ginsburg believes. She's never read anything she's written. Whereas Ron Paul, it's like, from in the Fed to just the war on drugs, the wars in the Middle East. I mean, his speeches get quoted constantly. His books, you know, helped to, you know, form the foundation of my political beliefs. So it's just amazing having this living legend, still around and just appreciating that he's here still commenting on what's going on and still as right as he was 40 years ago. Talk a little bit about Ron Paul and like why you're going to his birthday and, you know, what.
Well, I owe everything I do right now to Congressman Paul, and it's not just Congressman Paul, but it's also Aaron Russo, who made the film Freedom to Fascism,
because right,
it was in a theater in St. Charles, Illinois, where those Democrats are hiding out. So many years ago, I was in this theater. I saw the film. Aaron Russo was there. I see Ron Paul on the silver screen, and I was just like, holy cow, this is amazing. You know, and then I started working with Aaron Russo. And we were working with the Freedom to Fascism movement and the Restore the Republic movement, which then gave way to the Revolution Pack, which gave way to the next news network.
Right.
So all these things, excuse me, all these things are connected.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to bring it full circle, and, you know, I'm going to be giving a toast from the main stage on Saturday. And I'm so honored to be able to do that because I want to give back. I want him to know how much he's impacted me.
Right.
And it's not just him impacting me, it's everyone he's impacted. And it's like all the seeds he's planted. I mean, just going on those debates and what he was, I mean, the way he crafted his answers in those debates where everyone was watching in the United States, it was like, boom, dropping red pill after red. I mean, the way he could answer a question and explain it is just revolutionary beyond anything I can comprehend. So, I mean, so many people's lives were changed by Congressman Paul, and I'm just honored to be able to be there. We're going to be live streaming the event on Saturday. We'll be doing a simulcast on YouTube, and I'm excited to be there, man.
Yeah, people need to tune in. It's going to be a ton of great speeches from, I mean, everybody's going to be there. I'm going to be there as well, so I'm super excited for that. And, you know, just the fact that he was so far ahead of the curve and he set the table for all of this and he, you know, just came out swinging. And it's almost like you watch those old clips and as much as it gives you goosebumps watching him, you know,
just
understand the future better than anybody else. That's one thing. But what really hits you is when he gets booed by the crowd and you go, how were we so wrong? How was everybody else so wrong and so off the mark? And thank God we've moved away from that. I mean, we're still in the land of deceit, well, right?
But I remember,
it's amazing.
I remember when I went to CPAC, my first time ever going to CPAC, when I went, Donald Trump showed up, right? This was, I think, it must have been around 2008 or so. And Donald Trump shows up and he goes on stage. And this is when Ron Paul was still I think he was, the straw poll was going on, and I remember him going up and he's like, Ron Paul doesn't have a chance. I'm like, how dare you say that? You know, I'll never forget that moment. But yeah, I mean, being able to be at that event on Saturday, you know, surrounded by so many luminaries of his time, is going to be one of the honors of my life.
Well, and Ron Paul is just, he's sort of this remnant of the classic Americana. These are the guys that are supposed to be in office. We're not supposed to have these lifetime appointments where people go from, you know, majoring in theater to a senator and then they're there for 50 years. Ron Paul is like the perfect example of a guy who, I mean, he, you know, what number of people in his constituency did he hand deliver, right? He delivered babies, right? So it's like, yeah. he is a patriarch of these people. He, you know, worked in the community. He's a veteran, but he, you know, was an established leader of his community already. That's the guy you elect to go to Congress. He's already successful. He doesn't have anything to prove. He can speak out. He can be totally independent because he's got the loyalty of his constituency. That's what America is supposed to be. That is how this republic is supposed to be run. And it's just such stark difference between him and the likes of, you know, what a time, Jasmine Crockett or whatever. And it's like blasphemy to even say their two names in the same sentence. But he just represents this old school, true Americana that, I'm glad it's still with us, but it's going away.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, his message has stuck with me for so long. And as you know, I'm White House correspondent, and I've had the opportunity to ask questions of the administration, even President Trump himself. But I had one mission that I wanted to fulfill. And that was I wanted to ask the Treasury Secretary about the illegal application of the income tax.
Right.
And after there was one week we were at the White House and they don't normally do this, but this week they did. If you recall, remember when they had all those signs with all the people that the illegals they had taken in?
Yeah, sure.
So it was that week they were doing press briefings at 8 o'clock in the morning. They did three that week, which was actually quite unusual because they're usually about 1 o'clock midweek, maybe Tuesday. So you got to get into the White House briefing room, and being not an assigned member in one of those special seats, I have to go there and make sure that I stand in the wings of that room and stay there. So right. I was getting to the White House like 6:45 in the morning, holding my spot until 8 o'clock when the press briefing would begin. So I was there for, you know, Stephen Miller, Treasury Secretary Bessent, Border Czar Tom Homan. But the day that the Treasury Secretary was there, I was right there. Like, I wasn't much further than we are, standing there on the side. So I'm standing there waiting for my question, never get it. The day goes on. The days of the White House are long. Your feet are killing you. You're standing up. You know, you're chasing. You hear the whispers in the room. That's actually one of the cool things, is you hear all the reporters. You hear, like, you know, Peter Ducey or Caitlin Collins, and you hear everybody talking in the press corps. It's a remarkable experience, especially when there's something brewing.
Right.
You know, like if somebody's about to be fired, you hear Rubio's this or that, you hear the names, and it's just an amazing experience because you're right there as the news is percolating.
Right,
in the
very
seat of power. So that day I had, you know, I'd done my news, I had done my hits, and I decided that I was going to just leave. And as I'm leaving, I see one of my friends who I've made, you know, you make some great relationships while you're there from other media outlets. You become allies. You realize who you can trust and who you can talk to. I wave goodbye to my friend and move along. But I pointed out to him, I said, hey, there's going to be a gaggle. I can see something's going on. You want to come down and get this? Because the gaggles that occur at the White House are very, like, spontaneous.
Right.
You know, like you're just waiting around. You're standing in the sun. But you know when they go out to those green tents that they're eventually going to have to make their way back, and that's when you have the opportunity to ask the question. So in those instances, I've been able to ask Stephen Miller a number of questions. In fact, when J.B. Pritzker said that Republicans should know no peace the night before, I was able to ask Stephen Miller about Pritzker, and that made national news. Miller's response. So long story short, I'm leaving, and I see – I'm looking down. I can see who it is. I'm like, oh, it's the Treasury Secretary. It's Bessent. He's coming up. And
like a lion spotting a gazelle.
Yeah, I'm like, there he is. This is my moment. And I had all my gear packed up. I was ready to leave. And I just, you know, just pulled out my camera and he comes walking up. Now, mind you, I had seen him at 8 o'clock that morning, right in the front. So I was in front of him. He knew suit, everything. He knew exactly who was standing there the whole time waiting to have a question. And he steps up and you got to pounce. You got to be fast. You got to be loud and you got to get that message out immediately. So I go ahead and I immediately run into, you know, Treasury Secretary, a question. And I go into the question about, now it was formulated in such a way where I could give him enough names so that he could bite onto those names and then I could ask the question. So
this is about income tax.
This is about income tax.
Okay.
Now, if you recall, the IRS whistleblowers had come forward, Shapley, and there was another one who had come forward, and now they have been appointed to roles in the Treasury. So with he and he appointed them to roles after they had been fired by the IRS. So I was able to ask, are these whistleblowers, now that they've been appointed to positions in Treasury, are they going to investigate what Congressman Ron Paul and filmmaker Aaron Russo have declared the illegal application of the income tax against American citizens? So it was a very pointed question to be able to throw out the whistleblowers, bring in Russo and Paul, and ask the question about the IRS. Now, what was interesting was that Harrison Fields, who was handling the situation, he was the handler from the White House comms team, he tried to shut down the question. The rest of the media who were there, because the question admittedly did get a little long-winded, and I'm like holding my phone, reading the questions, and I'm like kind of shaking, and I'm like trying to get it out, and I got this foreign media going, hurry up, get it over with, and Harrison starts going, wait a second, okay, shut it down, we don't want to ask this question, because I'm starting to talk about the illegal application of the income tax.
Right.
And then, then all of a sudden, the Treasury Secretary, he goes, no, I want to answer this.
Really?
I'm like, yeah, let's go. And of course, he didn't truly address the illegal application of the income tax, but he did bite on the part that I gave him about the whistleblowers and, you know, finding corruption within the organization.
Yeah.
So at least I got the answer.
Right.
It may not have been the answer I wanted, but, you know, that was one of the long missions I had was just to invoke Aaron Russo and Ron Paul's name on the White House grounds to the Treasury Secretary.
Absolutely.
Because those are the people who have impacted me.
Now that's, I mean, it represents a victory in and of itself that you're there on the White House lawn as an independent media. I mean, that in and of itself is a victory in this war that Ron Paul's been fighting for his entire life and that we've been fighting. It's like you're Hannibal. You're outside of Rome. We haven't ended the Fed yet, but Lord, we've never been this close. We've never been this. How many times has the, you know, Secretary of Treasury been asked whether the income tax is legal or not in the history of America? I mean,
yeah, no, never.
Things are changing so fast. What is that like being a White House correspondent as a dissident right wing figure in the new media? I mean, you're the worst of the worst, man. Well, how do they put up with you?
Well, what's interesting is, you know, in my first couple of weeks there, they don't give you a handbook. There's no like orientation session. I mean, my first day there, I didn't even know where to stand. And I got, you know, the color guard walking down, you know, walking down Pebble Road, and the military is planting flags of all 50 states. The Prime Minister of India is about to show up, and my wife and I get separated. I don't even know where the press room door is. And all of a sudden, like, I'm standing in the street and the color guard's walking at me and I'm like, holy cow. And then I got the White House going, you can't stand there. You got to move over here. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a madhouse.
And then there's moments where you have to compete with like the pool, right? These guys,
the establishment,
they've been there forever. And when you are, when you're the new face, they know it. Like, I've never seen this guy here before. Oh, but he's got a freaking hard pass. So,
every time people talk about it, it sounds like high school.
It really is.
It sounds like high school to me.
You know, okay.
The cliques, the cool kids, the popular kids.
Well, it's cutthroat, it's super competitive, and there's a pecking order.
Right.
So, for example, when you're going out to cover Marine One arrival or departure, the palm room doors open up, and then what happens is the different media pool, like TV goes out, photographers go out, radio goes out. So they all go out in stages, and they get first dibs on location. And then reporters go out who are non-pool, and it's literally like a herd.
Right.
And you're running out to try to plant your flag and, you know, and hold your position, and you're literally...
All the guests, dozens of them that have taken it, within 45 minutes to an hour, have varying degrees from extreme energy and feel really great, fog lifting, to just over the top crying. It feels so good. Cleans out the cells, just does incredible things. RFK Jr. loves it. We've got the strongest old Breathling Blue. But he's going on Owen in about 30 minutes. My show just ended, and I forgot to do this. Don't forget when he's on Owen to tell us what he felt. And if he doesn't feel it, we'll put that out. So Stuart, go ahead and take a half dropper or so. That's about a half dose. And then go ahead and shut that down. And then we're going to find out what happens to you. We'll see. Most people initially about 30 minutes, starts peaking after a couple hours. But just tell people what you think. And if you don't feel it, we're going to tell everybody.
20 minutes later.
I can feel a definite, like, an energy spike. Yeah, it feels pretty good.
What are you going to do now? Now that you have your energy spike.
I'm going to see if it has a crash.
I've never heard of a crash.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't. But yeah, it feels pretty good. Yeah, definitely, I feel sharper.
Okay.
Yeah, I was pretty tired coming in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was.
Well, you're running around Texas right now. You're dealing with some other issues here.
I was driving all over Texas giving speeches for True Texas Project.
So did he give you the drink or the capsules?
I took the drink, but I got a bottle of each, and I'm going to go and do a longer-term test. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah, I do feel kind of amped right now. Yeah.
Several weeks later.
You just saw an ad for Methylene Blue. You were here a few weeks ago. And I do this with every guest, more than 50 of them now. Every person has had clarity, energy, a fog lift is the most common. But what's really good is the long-term effects for your stamina, your energy, your libido, your how hard you can work out. It's amazing. So I had forgotten when he was coming in, we gave him a bottle because he loved it.
Almost gone.
I had forgotten to ask you if you listened and did it long-term. So just briefly, tell people the short-term effect and then now a few weeks later, the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, I do some Methylene Blue about a half hour before, and it just gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
We'll give you some. How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Something like that. You give me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theaudiencestore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, now 4 or 5 months ago, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know. I was like lifting way more, going way harder. And then I got really exhausted after about a week because the same thing happened to Rob Dew, who's a great long distance, bike rider. So he's quite the athlete. He said he was biking so hard up hills and stuff that he actually had to pull over because, his heart was going crazy. I mean, this stuff's wild.
Yeah, it's good. I like it better than doing like a 5 hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
It's not a stimulant. It just skips the oxidization process somehow.
So I've been using it while I'm out there doing search and rescue. So I'm almost out.
You're saying you love it for working out. Has it gotten better over time, or what long-term thing have you felt, or if nothing?
Well, I think the main thing is it gives me a better workout, and that has good results over time. Yeah, for sure.
That's what I found without even knowing.
Yeah.
And then O'Keefe's like, oh, it made my vision better. And Rob Dew goes, we have a bunch of callers already saying that. Did you see these studies about it, like curing glaucoma? And I'm not going to say, we're not selling it as a drug. I'm not saying it's going to do that. I'm like, God, this stuff's crazy. No, they don't want you to know about it. It's like ivermectin.
Right, exactly. Old school stuff.
But you can't take it if you're on SSRIs. And folks, it's so strong. Talk to your doctor first because it's not a game. Ours is really strong. If you'll just try it, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. We'll be right back with Stuart Rhodes.
Time as I was there, I had set up a tripod and my camera on a gimbal off to the side of the room, and this guy comes up walking up to me and he goes, you can't put that here. WHCA just said you can't have this here, White House Correspondents Association. And I'm like, oh, okay. So then I just packed up my tripod and I just held it, okay, now I gotta hold it, whatever. I'll make do. And then afterwards I went up to him and say, hey, I really appreciate the tip. I'm new here, but I appreciate your help.
Yeah.
That's all you can do, right?
Right.
You know, there's been moments where, you know, you're running out and like when the pool goes in, like they think that they have this sacred location, like in the East Room when there's a bill signing or something like that. Like you have to maneuver like past these stage areas that are, you wouldn't know otherwise.
Right.
But if you, like whenever I saw Caitlin Collins, I go, hey, Caitlin, I'm going wherever you go. Right? Because I'm like, she's in the pool. I'm just going to go wherever you go. Because yeah, I know you know where you're going.
Right. She's got the hookup. She's got somebody on the inside telling her exactly where to be.
I'm following you, Caitlin. And I just tell her, like, straight to her face, you know?
That's funny.
But even at NATO, like, that was a whole experience in itself. And
yeah, because you're traveling with the president. I mean, being a White House correspondent doesn't just mean you're in the White House. You travel when they travel.
Yeah, I was staying in the hotel that the White House had literally commandeered the entire hotel.
Right.
We stayed in this place.
That's so cool.
And you know, we were on these massive coach buses being transported to The Hague from the hotel. You know, and like Peter Ducey and Caitlin Collins are hanging out in the restaurant bar, and like no one from the public is allowed. It's like lockdown, Secret Service everywhere. It's an experience, man.
That sounds awesome, actually. Frankly, that sounds amazing. Again, if you're just joining us, this is Gary Franchi. He runs Next News Network. He's the chief White House correspondent. He founded Next News Network. You can follow them on YouTube and Rumble and a number of other sources at Next News Network. And, of course, follow him on X at Gary Franchi. And, again, it's just sort of serendipitous that you were passing through on the way to Ron Paul's birthday. Full disclosure, we're pre-recording this on Thursday. Tomorrow, on Friday, I'm going to play a bunch of videos of Ron Paul just to celebrate his legacy. But I also wanted to have you on because just this week, you happened to break a giant story that we were following here, which was the runaway scrape, the Democrats fleeing the state of Texas because they were going to lose a vote. So they decided to flip the border, take their ball and go home. And they were hiding out. Well, you tell me the story. So these Democrats flee. Nobody knows where they are. John Cornyn's calling the FBI. They're, you know, everybody's scrambling. How did you locate them? You found them. Where were they? How'd you find them?
Right. So what happened on Sunday night, my good friend Chad called me up and he's like, hey, man, we just got a tip. And we believe that the Democrats are over at the Q Center. And I said, okay, well, you know, what do you want to do? He's like, do you have a drone? Can we go over there? So Chad decided to go over there and do some recon. Now, how did Chad find out? Chad found out because Mark Vargas of the Illinois Review got a tip from some grassroots folks. And I'm not sure exactly where that came from. Apparently there was a chat session or some kind of thread. People were talking. So the Q Center it's a convention center and hotel that – is like, you can lock this place down. It's a perfect location. And it's also a Hilton property. It's a Pritzker property. So obviously he's the governor. He can just say, you know, open up the Q Center. So maybe somebody at the Q Center housekeeping or something sends a message. Hey, I, these guys are here.
Well, it had to be a big operation. I mean, these are Democrat operatives and senators, congressmen. I mean, there's a lot of people involved in this.
So you have 50 plus representatives and their support staff.
You're right.
So it's not something small. You know, you've got congressional members like Jasmine Crockett and Al Green who are there too. So what happens is Vargas gets the tip. And he contacts Chad. Chad goes over and does recon, sees the place lit up like a Christmas tree in the middle of the night.
Right.
Now, normally, when you drive by this place, it's dark.
Right.
It's nothing going on. Well, Chad's like, they're there. Right?
Yeah.
So I get in touch with Vargas the next morning, and I'm like, listen, this place is 5 minutes from where I live. I'm going to go there myself, and I'm going to investigate. So what did I do? I got in my car and I drove right to the front security gate and I said, hi, I'm Gary Franchi. I'm a White House correspondent. I'm here to interview Jasmine Crockett. We have an interview. Can you let me in? And he's like, what's your name? He goes through the whole thing and the security guard comes walking up as he's talking to me and he's holding the security manifest. He flips the page to page two, and all I see is representative, representative, representative.
Right.
I see every single freaking name that is listed on the security manifest. And then he goes, makes a phone call, and he, you know, what's your name? We go back and forth for a minute. And eventually, I say, well, listen, I saw her name on the list. He says, yes, I know, but you're not allowed in.
Right.
I'm like, thank you. The verbal confirmation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, all right. And so I made the, I mean, he let me go through. I had to make a U-turn, and then I filmed the stand-up right in front of the building. And as I'm filming the stand-up, so while I was talking, there was a white bus that departed, and it was all the Democrats on that bus going to a protest. We knew they had a protest in Aurora, Illinois that day. And since they were staying at the Q Center, the white bus carrying them out to that location. So it was like perfect opportunity. I'm standing there doing my report and the freaking bus goes past, and I had,
right.
I had a feeling because I saw the bus enter and I'm going, that's got to be, they're leaving soon. So I set up a second camera, pointed it at the guard shack exit and waited. And sure enough, that thing came out. I got a second angle of it, and that's what we posted on X.
You did like real journalism. I mean, this sounds like real journalism.
It was awesome. It was
fun. Sounds very fun. Yeah. And I mean, they were literally hiding out. I mean,
yes.
This was not a public thing. Oh, we're all going to the Q Center. I mean, the latest story, and this is just from earlier today, the FBI will help locate Texas Democrats who fled the state. Cornyn says the FBI has agreed to cooperate with Texas state law enforcement to locate the 50 Democratic legislators who left the state to avoid a vote on redistricting. So, I mean, they got the FBI hunting them down. Gary Franchi finds him down the street. When it was the Q Center, I was like, what? Oh, no. Oh no.
Yeah.
What is this about?
Yeah.
QAnon strikes back.
Yeah. Everyone's remarking in the comments, like, is this really happening? Is this a movie? Like, is this what?
Well, the whole thing.
what's interesting too is, like, when you start doing a deeper dive, you recognize who's there. And then these Democrats they're posting videos on X.
Right.
And
I saw that. Yeah.
And they're saying, I'm defecting. I'm not doing it. We're standing up for the people. And I looked at the brickwork behind this woman who was speaking. I go, damn it. I know that brickwork. And I just literally like typed in, Q Center photographs. And I took a closer look. I'm like, there's the brickwork. There's the line. I can see it. She's standing right here in the shot. You know, like she gave away the look. I mean, you have to know.
Yeah.
But I'm like, there she is. She's making a video in like the green, whatever.
The courtyard. Sorry. Courtyard, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Q Center.
That's so funny. Yeah. And I saw that post and you lined up. You go, look, here's the background she's using.
Yeah.
And I mean, this whole story is crazy. The whole story is insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess it's typical, but, and it's like I say it so much. It's just a cliche at this point. But I mean, everything they do, they accuse you of doing. I mean, they basically they were going to lose a vote, so they all decided to leave anyway. So now there's a bunch of Texans who aren't getting emergency supplies right. because they're refusing to approve it because they were going to lose this vote, and so they just took their ball and go home. I mean, a literal betrayal of democracy, abandoning their post.
We find out this morning that there's bomb threats.
Right.
And they had to evacuate the facility. Over 400 people had to be evacuated from the facility. I reached out to a source. And they confirmed that the bomb threat that came in was from an anonymous email.
Right.
And there was nothing to it. The place was swept. They didn't find anything. But just goes to show, I mean, they could have set up that email themselves.
Right.
You know, just to make themselves look like the victim and, you know, some MAGA called in a bomb threat.
Yeah.
You know, so it could have been a total false flag. It could have been someone irate from Texas.
Yeah.
You know, like wanting them to come home. But they're hiding out. We'll wait and see what happens. They did file the arrest warrants. They could go up there. And I did consult with some law enforcement in Illinois. They said that there's not an Illinois law enforcement agency that would go in to enforce these warrants under any conditions.
Right. Well, and is that, do you think, because Pritzker, I mean, that's an order political. From on high, right?
It's political, and it's also hard to enforce, in their mind, I guess, hard to enforce the jurisdictional application of the warrant that's from Texas. But I argue, you know, if you got a warrant, you know, like if you have a warrant from another state, you should be able to just be taken in. I mean,
yeah.
You know how it works?
Well, there's a weird extradition between states. I mean, but this is the problem though, isn't it? It's like, I don't want to live in a country where the representatives are being arrested by the police. Like, why do they keep making us do this to them? Like, that's my frustration. It's, you know, the judges that are interfering and, you know, putting injunctions on everything Trump's doing. It's like, okay, you're leaving us with the option of either we got to just always lose to you because you're always going to do an indictment or an injunction and you're going to stop everything, or we got to like get rid of judicial review. I don't like that option because then you're setting up a dictatorship. So it's like, just stop interfering constantly. Stop breaking the law. Stop just, you know, trying to to, you know, game the system like this and we could all just get along. But it's like they're acting in a way that almost is forcing, you know, our government. We got people going up, you know, representatives saying, I'm Guatemalan before I'm American. Like, what are we supposed to do with this?
Who are we representing here?
Yeah. So, you know, part of me is like, well, to me, the government should kick her out. But then it's like, all right, do we want a government that has the final say or should the people be the final say? But if the people are voting or electing somebody who...
Well, I think it does come down to loyalty.
Yeah.
You know, if your loyalty is to Somalia, but you're a representative in Minnesota, then maybe, you know, like, there should be some kind of question here.
You would think.
You know, but...
But then
then you go on and you marry your brother and that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, well, and she's not the only one either. I mean, yeah. And that was a frustrating thing. I was going on this big rant about it because there was a video of a Somali representative from Maine, you know, talking about how she was in the government to benefit Somalia.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I'm going off about it. And then the crew pulls up her district. It's 90% white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. So it's like, I can kind of understand it if you have a congressional district that's all Somalians and they all vote for the Somali woman. But it's like, what are we doing here, guys? You're voting for some woman that is literally telling you I'm more loyal to my home country than your country. And you're saying, you're going, yay.
Yes.
What? It's crazy. It's so bizarre. But, you know, the point is the Democrats are just, they're out of control, man. They won't stop. They're being insane. And it's like Republicans are going to have to start taking extreme measures just to rein them in.
Well, I mean, let's just get right down to it. It's time for arrests. It's time for real arrests. You know, we need with what Cash Patel and Bongino and Tulsi Gabbard have uncovered, you know, from those burn bags is remarkable. And we're now seeing the actual paper trail, the language, the people behind it, the architects, you know, the Julia Smith, who was actually whispering in Hillary's ear, and Hillary goes on and says, yeah, I like this plan. Let's execute the plan. The plan gets to Obama. The plan's carried out by Comey and Clapper and Brennan. So we know the whole chain of events here. So, and it is encouraging to see that Comer's coming out. And he's bringing Bill Clinton, he's bringing Hillary in front of his oversight committee, but is he bringing them to the oversight committee over the Epstein case, or is it, you know, is he still going to have the ability to ask him questions with respect to what they found in the burn bags? You know, because Hillary's implicated there.
Right.
Bill Clinton's implicated through the Epstein flight logs and other things that he was a part of. I mean, the corruption goes so massive.
Yeah.
But we need it.
We need arrest.
We need arrest.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear a grand jury is about to convene, and that's the first step. But at the same time, my viewers are so freaking pissed. In the comments, they're like, nothing's going to happen. This is garbage. We don't care. Keep talking. Like, no. This is the moment. We have the ability to clean house. Donald Trump has put people in place that can actually execute the law as it is written and clean freaking house.
Yeah.
We need to do it. And if we don't do it, there is no country left.
Exactly. No, and that's the thing. It's like, if y'all think that you are, you know, preserving these systems by not revealing the secrets because you think that, oh, well, you know, this, we gotta uphold the reputation of the FBI. Y'all don't understand. No. And this is the funny thing, being, you know, a right-wing media personality or whatever and seeing other people, it's like, you think that what we're saying stream, go talk to the dude down the block. Go talk to your neighbor and ask him how he thinks, because he doesn't have to worry about the FCC. He doesn't have to worry about YouTube censorship. And people are pissed. People are very pissed, and they really want drastic action. So it's like, you have to deliver results. And I'm so sick of gathering evidence. I feel like we're waiting for like a serial killer to be tried, and they just every week come out with more evidence. And we're like, no, we know he's the killer. We know he's the guy.
Yeah.
You've got to try him and convict him now. Yeah. Enough with the evidence. It's been years of gathering evidence.
Well, I mean, if you go all the way back to the first Trump administration, Devin Nunes goes out in front of the cameras and he basically says, hey, you know, we've got the evidence.
It's
right here. I remember when he came out and said it, he's got the smoking gun. And the whole administration just went on its way.
Yeah.
And then
he became a Fox News personality. He's like, what is happening
here? Yeah, like, wait, what's going on? Like, so now at least I think because Trump's in his second administration, you know, here's something I want to say that I don't know if people are saying this that needs to be said, is that going to the origins of Russiagate, Obamagate, whatever you want to call it,
where it started with Julius Smith, like I said, to Hillary, to Obama, and to the intelligence community. I draw the line directly to Butler and the assassination attempt on President Trump.
Mm.
Because I think that was really the last effort that they had to get rid of Trump.
Right.
I mean, we all saw what happened that day. You know, the slope roof, the loner kid, the burner phones, the crypto accounts overseas. We still don't have answers for his training in a facility, a gun range. Known, you know, intelligence people or law enforcement are there at the same time. So I truly believe that from going, you can draw a line from Butler all the way back to Obamagate, and they lost. You know, yeah. God was on Trump's side, still is on Trump's side, still has his hand on him. But I think more people need to draw that line personally.
And that's really fascinating. So I'll up you one, because I'd say there's also a very, you know, thick and evident line between what you're talking about, the Obamagate and Russiagate, and the second assassination attempt with the Ukraine guy. Oh, because sure. Remember, you know, the whole Russiagate collusion, there's a reason they chose Russia to be the country, because they're setting up, you know, the eventual war that they were planning, and they didn't want Trump to interfere with that. And then the whole first impeachment where he was trying to investigate Ukraine, you know, you see all these little bits, and what you see underneath is this long planned war with Russia, this long planned conflict with Russia that Trump kept almost, you know, disrupting. And really this has been, you know, a key move that they've been trying to make for a long time is starting war with Russia to lead to World War III. And Trump really was a threat to all that. And so, you know, I think the line to the assassination attempts is a very evident and important
question. Without question, I think there's, you know, because, okay, Butler, they failed in Butler. Okay, we know this other guy, by the way, and he's got ties to this, and it'll line up perfectly. You know, let's just go ahead and send him out there and put him on the fence line. Thankfully, you know, that didn't, you know, God was intervening that day as well.
And I think that people like yourself, people like Alex Jones, people like myself to a lesser degree, but people who have been in this fight for like more than 10 years, I think have a different perspective on Trump. And I think a lot of the younger people are a lot more frustrated with Trump because they didn't spend 10 or 15 years before Trump ever arrived being totally hopeless. Trump arrives, it's like, oh my, here's the guy who's saying what we say. And so, I mean, do you think that affects how you interpret what Trump's doing? Obviously, there's a lot of, you know, heat on Trump right now, especially how he's dealing with Israel. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's a distraction? It just seems to me like, again, myself, Alex Jones, yourself, see this in a longer timeline and don't quite get so worked up over some of Trump's missteps.
Well,
why do you think that is?
I mean, I think that if you want to talk missteps, first of all, you have to call it like you see it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when that DOJ memo came out, and they're like, oh, there's nothing to see here with the Epstein thing. And then they released 10 hours of video, and there's like missing minutes of footage, clearly edited.
Such like, nonsense. Man,
whose idea was that, right? Like, they only added fuel to the fire. That was a huge, huge misstep. And I wouldn't relent. I saw, but what was funny is watching the media landscape and seeing the dominoes fall, right? So like Charlie Kirk comes out, he's like, oh, I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
You're right, right.
And then you have Dinesh D'Souza, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Mark Levin comes out, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. And you're like, okay, they all got the phone call.
Yeah, you know? Literally. Like, I think Charlie Kirk said, I got the phone call, right?
Yeah, like, and I'm like, you know what? Like, and I called out Charlie on X, you know? I'm like, dude, a week ago you were saying this, and now this? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Like, let's go. Let's get some answers. You know, but that was a misstep. You got to call it like you see it. You got to hold the line. So, you know, but looking at the long history of things, I mean, you know, you have to have perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thankful that Donald Trump has come forward and, you know, he has been a lightning rod for the establishment. You know, he's said the right things. He's done the right things. And he's woken up so many people. But again, I draw the line even back to Ron Paul, because without Ron Paul, you know, there wouldn't be no Donald Trump.
100%.
You know, you had the Ron Paul revolution. You had the Tea Party, even though it was co-opted by, you know, the establishment eventually. But the Fed movement and all these different things, this is the populist movement that has been growing and growing and growing and then found a home with Donald Trump. And now we are here.
Right. Right. And, And again, you know, I see a lot of young people, the Nick Fuentes types, that just go, ah, Trump's co-opted. He's, you know, we just need to toss him to the side. I mean, they want nothing to do with him. Whereas, like, you know, for those of us who have been watching for a while, it's like, no, he is still our guy. Like, we still need him very much to be our champion. He's still doing great things. Yes, there's some frustration there, and there's, you know, some long-term, you know, problems that we have to deal with when maybe what happens when Trump goes, you know, retires, who's going to follow up with him. But it's like, this it's not an option. We got to support Trump while he's in office. What is the other option?
Well, now they're saying that, you know, obviously, J.D. Vance would be the one to carry the mantle. I'm hearing, you know, they want Rubio to step up as the VP. I'm like, no, no, thank you. I do not need like a Bushite Republican Rubio, you know, in that position. You know, in my opinion, I think if you want to keep this thing going, you want to keep the party going, you put Donald Trump Jr. as the VP nomination. You put Vance at the top of the ticket. You get a Trump-Vance ticket again, you know, and you're going to be able to carry this momentum forward. And I think that's really the only way to do it. You know, or maybe Eric or maybe someone else. But I personally think you put J.D. Vance, Donald Trump Jr. right there on the ticket, and I think you can keep this party going.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they haven't found something political for Don Jr. to do. It seems like that's sort of an oversight, because I would have expected by now he'd have some Congress seat or appointment.
Well, there were rumors.
I guess claims of nepotism. They don't want to appoint him to anything.
Well, there were rumors he was going to run for the governorship of was it Montana or Wyoming? One of those states I heard, but that was years ago. That never panned out. You'd think that he would try to position himself into something, but if all he needs is to be tapped to be the VP, and he doesn't have to have a political record that can be criticized,
that's true.
Only his talking points.
Yeah.
What are they gonna do? Go to his Rumble channel and be like, "You said this on Rumble." Like, I don't think anyone's gonna care. They could pull all the clips from all the speeches.
I'm pretty sure Don Jr. has tried to sell me some sort of pink salt trick on Rumble.
Yeah.
He's on all the AI ads. But I remember seeing John Jr. really early on, like, I don't know, whenever he gave a speech at the Republican convention, I guess, in 2016, and hearing him speak for the first time, going, oh, wait, this guy's got chops. I mean, he's got very similar attitude, very similar presence to his father, maybe even a little bit more well-spoken than his dad, at least has a different style that's maybe a little bit more accessible than his dad. So, like, I remember in 2016 going, whoa, Don Jr.'s next, because, you know, he's got 5, 4 years, 8 years to work on his resume.
Yeah, look at, you know, John Adams, right?
Yeah.
And his son, you know, John Quincy Adams.
We've had some good dynasties. We've had some bad dynasties in this country.
What I'm saying is, like, you know, it's happened before.
It has. Absolutely.
So history can rhyme.
And it's not a small thing being there in the White House, seeing how it's run. I mean, I would think that would give you a leg up even more so than being a senator for however many years.
Sure.
Well,
Don Jr. is watching this right now, by the way.
Oh, yeah? How you doing? How you doing, Don? We're big fans here. Well, it's just incredibly exciting. What is next for Next News Network? Obviously, you're there in the White House, you know, and as long as they'll have you, as long as they can, you know, put up with you. What's next for Next News Network?
Well, right now, we actually just broke a story internationally regarding Cambodia.
Right.
And we received the news tip. Investigated it, found out there was a reporter in Cambodia. Like, a lot of people may not be paying attention, but they're, you know, they have a media infrastructure too.
Mm.
So a reporter comes out and says that he wants to have a highway named, like, the biggest highway in Cambodia named after Donald Trump.
That's
so
cool.
What did I do? Like, I found the guy's video, I put it up on my X account, you know, I amplified it. And then I reported on it the next day, amplified that. Next thing you know, like, the Prime Minister of Cambodia is coming out, and he's gone.
Alex Jones has good genes. In fact, there's only one thing better than Alex's genes. Alex's genes on Methylene Blue. Just look at those pecs. That charm. The focus. Get your Methylene Blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good genes great again.
For a limited time, you can get this limited edition murdered out
InfoWars shirt at thealexshowstore.com with the American flag on the shoulder. It's historic, and it funds the operation. We've got other cool shirts that just came in as well. The new Liberty Bell 1776 Declaration of Independence shirt is out. It's limited edition, and it's got my signature on the back. That really triggers lip tarts. And then there's this limited edition. I weaponized the American people. It was actually you weaponized them, and we're winning. Get it all now at thealexshowstore.com. Thanks for your support.
It's almost poetic, the products that we sell, because yes, they are the best. Yes, it is the best price for the highest quality. Yes, they are third-party tested. It's almost poetic because as we advocate for humanity, what we sell to you is that which makes you or allows you to make yourself a better version of yourself. Whether it's getting the methylene blue, which helps you with focus and energy and mental clarity, or ultimate life force, which makes your body healthier in so many ways I don't have the time to explain to you. Whether it's the Shilajit that gives you incredible vitality, or the ultimate burn, which ensures that your metabolism is optimal, or the optimal human, which is everything the body needs. You see, we're fighting for your mind, your body, and your soul, not just with the products that we sell, but with the message of this network. We have to have the truth. We have to have freedom of speech. We have to have our rights, because, folks, we're about ready to go into an artificial intelligence war, into a space war, the likes of which humanity couldn't even dream of, even in science fiction. So please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now, not just for your mind and your body, but for your species.